Hottest deals in the Motor City. Now WRAF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRAF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like the Shark Club on Ford Road in Canton. You can purchase full price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half price certificate.
Anyway, people to the left, liberals, progressives, leftists, and all that, pride themselves on not being the haters of the world, the haters of this country. Aren't the people introducing this toxicity of hate and rage into our society? And yet I find myself really attracted to this song, but this is the second week in a row. The thing just won't open. And Rick Fox, I opened it in there before. You opened it? Rick Fox is our producer and our phone screener. When you call 313-298-WRIF, maybe somebody upstairs is trying to tell me, don't play it, Pete. When I mean somebody upstairs, I mean my boss. Could they rig this thing, you think, so you couldn't? You know what? Let me do this. I'll see if I can go to another one of, let's see if something else will work in here. We'll get here by the band No Effects. I can't even say the name of this one. Let's see if this one opens. Now, huh. You know, you can go to it, either my website or Eric Bloomrich. And let's see how that's spelled. E-R-I-C-B-L-U-M-R-I-C-H. So it's Eric Bloomrich. Now, none of these will open here. They must have this set up in a manner that, they're not letting me play this. All right, let's talk about sweeter things. You know, let's talk about love and marriage, okay? And a couple of friends of mine are going to get married. They've lived together for a long time, so, you know, all you kind of religious people who don't think that's right, you ought to be very happy for them. They're going to consummate their love, their commitment, and they've been together, I think, at least 10 years. I think they're probably late 30s, early 40s. And they decided, time to tie the knot. So, and my wife and I, actually, I met one of them through work, and she provides a number of the guests that we have at the end of Night Call. It will be on at 1 a.m. tonight. And, well, I mean, you know where this is going, right? So, my friend Gail is going to marry her partner, Betsy. So, it's Gail and Betsy. It's two women. And I don't think they'll mind me saying their names. One thing, I'm not saying their last names. And also, they jokingly say that they're America's only lesbians. And they say that because they keep appearing everywhere. I mean, they'll come out when the Supreme Court finally does something right and abolishes sodomy laws, or when the Massachusetts Supreme Court, like it just did, said, hey, you know, people in our community, wait a minute, am I hearing music? Are we getting this? Yeah, wow. I hear some music back. Anyways, the Supreme Court finally gives them the information. You're human beings, right? We're recognizing you as human beings. And the Massachusetts Supreme Court, 4-3, said even civil unions aren't enough. We have to give everybody in our community full marriage rights. And so there's a big celebration. And there's Betsy and Gail, and they'll go out and, hug and everything like that. And they wind up in Newsweek magazine on AOL, where news comes in. Where else? I mean, it just got sent out on the UPI wires. And so they jokingly call themselves America's only lesbians. Now, this is... I don't know. I guess why I'm searching for words to say upset conservatives, because there is an article in the New York Times today called "Conservatives Use Gay Union as Rallying Cry." So it's not like they're real upset about this as much as they're saying here is a golden opportunity for us to mobilize the troops. Those indignant Christian busybodies, not the emphasis on busybodies, not on Christian, because there's Christian gay churches, of course, and also there's Islamic busybodies and Jewish busybodies, and I'm sure all the other religions as well, that want to get into people's personal lives and determine what kind of choices they can make for love and for marriage. Now, most of the article is about how they're going to mobilize the troops around the defense of marriage amendment to the Constitution. mean, this is what always happens with these people that claim that they are the big defenders of the Constitution, right? That's the conservatives, right? They say, you know, this is almost like holy writ, the Constitution. Yet whenever they lose in its institutions, they want to alter it. I mean, they don't even have a sense of fair game playing. When something doesn't go their way, ultimately they say, let's change the rules. So, you know, a long time ago, the Supreme Court said women's reproductive decisions are up to a woman. Now let's change the Constitution so a woman can't do that. Prayer, same thing. Let's change the Constitution. Now they want to have an amendment to the Constitution that would specifically discriminate against our neighbors, our friends, our families, our family members. Well, here's what, Michael P. Ferris, he's chair of something called Homeschool Legal Defense Association. He says, I don't care if you call it civil unions. I don't care if you call it domestic partnership. I don't care if you call it cantaloupe soup. If you are legally spouses at the end of the day, I'm not willing to do that. So listen to this personal pronoun. He finds it offensive on some basis or another, which is up to him. I don't care if he finds it offensive. And I'm sure my friends Betsy and Gail don't care whether their intention to get married in the state of Massachusetts, which now allows it, upsets him either. He'd probably laugh even. But get this, James Dobson of Focus on the Family. Dobson sent a direct mail appeal to 2.5 million people. He says the homosexual, you know, that's the way they say it. They don't say homosexual. They say homosexual. I don't get it. Yeah, seriously, listen to these conservatives closely. They never say homosexual. They say homosexual. Maybe because, you know, when they were kids, either they were called or would call other kids homos. You know, you homo. You ever wonder why they have on signs? I wonder if that upsets them where it says homo milk. You know, $2 or something like that. Why does it say homo milk? I mean, it's for homogenized, not for homosexual or homosexual, as they say. I mean, there's something up here. This might be part of the homosexual activist agenda. Think about that. Just a way of kind of desensitizing good busybody Christians to, you know, the creeping homosexual activist movement or something like that. Because all milk is homogenized. Used to be. Back in our grandparents' time, would have cream at the top. But then I don't know what they do. They shake it up or something like that. So it's homogenized. And it never says homogenized milk. It always says homo milk. Doesn't say pasteurized. It's all pasteurized as well. It doesn't say homo pasteurized milk. Okay, you get my point. Anyways, here Dobson says the homosexual activist movement is poised to administer a devastating and potential fatal blow to the traditional family. That's what he says because, and actually it was the Supreme Court made up of even like a Republican and people like that that said, hey, we can't discriminate against people in our community just because they haven't made the, well, I shouldn't even, that's not choices. They don't have the same sexuality. They don't define themselves in the same terms that we do. Now, somewhere, let me see if this is in the same thing. I thought this was in here where they were saying that, that it's important to have a family. Well, what do they call two married men or two married women? Why isn't that a family? Yeah. I mean, because they have a specific definition? I'm not going to let these people define me. I mean, if the other people want to let them define them, it's up to them. Where was this little thingo here? Oh, yeah. This was because about a couple thousand people carrying these huge crosses rallied in Boston today. And they want to support a state constitutional amendment defining marriages between one man and one woman. And they said, here's what they were chanting. Repent or perish. Whoa. See, I mean, they've always got this fear thing, right? What do they think about these Christian gay churches? They're going to perish, I guess. And the Archbishop Sean O'Malley of the Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Boston said, the rally was not about hate-mongering, as some critics have charged. We're here because we are concerned about marriage and about family. Good, strong marriage and family are good for our country, for society. And that's what makes up the vast majority of unions. Yeah, right. Good, strong marriages and families. And I know, not a lot, but a number of day partners, some with kids even. So why does that violate that? But these people want to enforce, just like in the abortion question, they want to enforce their theology down on the rest of us. You want to marry a woman if you're a guy? Marry a woman. If you're a woman and you want to marry a guy? Marry a guy. I mean, nobody cares. Gays don't care. I don't care. I'm married to a woman. I don't care if men marry men. I don't care if women carry women. Do you? Now, here's what George W. said. A man in trouble. John Kerry wins the... get in on this at any time. 313-298-WRIF. I mean, of course, this Dobson and all of these right-wing characters are just trying to raise a lot of money. But he says that the homosexual activist movement is poised to administer a devastating, potentially fatal blow to the traditional family. Now, how is that? I mean, people are directed by their inherent sexuality. And it looks like 85 to 88% of us are heterosexual, right? So we're going to marry the opposite sex. 12 to 15% of us have homosexual sexuality as their core definition, and with these kind of laws, they'll marry people of the same sex. So what is the deal? How is the traditional family about to receive a fatal blow? These people are nutballs. And I mean, they'd be okay. I mean, if they would just take care of themselves. Or if they would just be involved in advocacy. If they want to go around and yell, repent or perish, that's totally up to them. Let them do it. You know, I mean, let them chant it. But why do they have to get the political state to enforce their theology on the rest of us who don't buy it? That's what I don't understand. 313-298-WRIF. And if you're far away or don't like to talk on the air or can't get through, you can email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Bush, as I said, a man in trouble, facing a man from... Not even, you know, for sure that Kerry, I would say Kerry's going to get the nomination. Hey, John Kerry, one in Michigan, one in Maine. And Bush is going down, which is always bad. I mean, they're going to capture bin Laden, or he'll start another war, or, you know, there'll be another terrorist attack. Something, got to get his ratings back up, and that's always what happens. Maybe they're going to release, didn't David Letterman say this, they'll release Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein has escaped. You know, then they'll have some big manhunt and catch him again. Here's what Bush said. Marriage is a sacred institution between a man and a woman. He knows. He's now, you know, he's not no longer in touch with booze and cocaine. He is now in touch with God. So he knows that marriage is a sacred institution between a man and a woman. John Guinan from New York wrote into the New York Times. He says, government is not in the business of making things sacred. Those who believe that marriage is sacred will no doubt choose to be married in a religious ceremony. Religions make their own choices about whom they marry. Makes sense. Dino Giorgio from Fort Lauderdale, Florida writes, my partner and I are happy to be part of a community of gay men and women who are part of long-term relationships. We've been together for 43 years. So he's an older man. He's been together for 43 years with his partner. And this would seem to meet the definition of the Archbishop of Boston, Sean O'Malley, who says that, you know, good families, permanent families are good. We've been together for 43 years. He says Britney Spears was married for 55 hours and had more legal rights than we ever had. That doesn't seem too fair, does it? I mean, I don't think so. How about you? All right, 313-298-WRIF, Bush desperate as can be about his being finally exposed, at best, as operating under faulty intelligence. Me, I say that they lied. They knew there were no weapons of mass destruction. They planned for long ago to invade for oil, for empire, for crass domestic political considerations. And Bush said, I expected to find the weapons. Well, how come I knew that there weren't any weapons? And millions of people around the world did. And guests that I had and UN inspectors knew it. Hans Blix, who was head of the inspectors, who knew there was no weapons there, said Blair and Bush were like these cheesy encyclopedia salesmen. Now, what does this say? It says page 2. Oh, yeah. Here's what Bush said with Tim Russert. Tim Russert, of course, giving him big, fat ones. Somewhere or other, what was it, on some right-wing website, it said, Russert grills Bush. Let me at him. Let me at George W. Bush. Grilling, indeed. Anyways, here's what Bush said this morning on Meet the Press. Where are these weapons, Russert at least asked. I mean, everybody's asking that. They could have been destroyed during the war. Speculating about the reasons that the reports were wrong. Saddam and his henchmen could have destroyed them as we entered into Iraq. They could be hidden. They could have been transported to another country. Maybe the Venusian space fleet scooped them up. I mean, he didn't say that, but he might as well have. They could have been destroyed during the war. I mean, this is absolute nuts. This is a bald-faced lie, and either he's too dumb to know it, which is very possible. I mean, he depends totally on these sinister characters running the administration, Cheney and Rumsfeld and people like that. So it's very possible that he could have believed all this phony, so-called intelligence. I mean, what a misnomer, right, that they had this. I mean, people like me knew there were no weapons of mass destruction. The President of the United States thought there were. They could have been destroyed during the war. Well, they weren't. And they could have been destroyed as we entered into Iraq. Well, that's not true either, and there's no reason to think that. They could be hidden. Well, they knew where they all were. I mean, how come we knew where they all were, had all these photographs? I mean, all the photographs were phony. You know, anyways, we can get on with more stuff. So, Kerry, finally bringing up the thing about George W. Bush, undoubtedly AWOL for over a year. Kerry questions Bush on National Guard service. Well, here's two rich guys, two Skull and Bones members. This is this rich guys club at the Yale. They were both members of it. Kerry volunteers, gets wounded, gets Purple Hearts, gets medals of valorous service. George W. Bush, this weenie, gets his rich daddy to get him in the Texas Air National Guard, where other people are off slogging through the jungles, killing and being killed. And he can't even bring himself to show up to all these meetings where he's supposed to. He's, but I got an honorable discharge. All right. Rick Fox, let's get some of our listeners on the air. The line 2, 313-298-WRIF. Email goes to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Hi, it's Night Call, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, hi, Peter. It's David in San Francisco.
Well, David, welcome to the broadcast.
Yeah, how are you? It's been a long time, but yeah, we miss you. I'll tell you, my girlfriend, all sorts of people miss you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I hope you're having a good year. Hey, you know, it's funny you were talking about the mandates of love. You know, that's really what this whole thing is about. Bush is proclaiming himself God. You know, it's funny, he even portrays himself as chosen by God and that he loves Jesus. And he seems to get really good coverage in that newspaper out of Washington, D.C. that's owned by Reverend Moon, who says he is Jesus.
There you go. There you go. All
so
right.
Is that, you know, if Jesus told Bush that he's going to be the president, and Sun Yat-moon is Jesus, then... probably explains a lot. So, I just don't want to get it all complicated. But
well, David, let me ask you one thing. You live in San Francisco, and I know on the corner of, Market and, why can't I see that? There's even a huge rainbow flag flying. And San Francisco is...
like Castro or something?
Castro, yeah. It's, yeah. And there's with symbol of the gay movement. And here is a city that probably has more gays in it per capita than any other city in the United States. You have a girlfriend. Any problem living there?
Oh, no, not at all. No, it's a great city. No, I get along just fine with everybody. It's a nice city. I was so impressed. I was brought up in St. Louis, you know, and came out here to work on a political campaign and just couldn't leave. That was too good. I mean, there's so much. I thought I was a hot shot when I was in St. Louis and in Colorado and various places in the world. And You know, I came out here, and there are so many smart people. I mean, there are homeless people with PhDs.
I mean, well, I'll tell you, with the rents in San Francisco, if I lived out there, I'd probably be homeless. But
oh, it is. It's crazy. But, you know, hey, I wanted to do one thing. One of the reasons I wanted to call, are you aware that Arnold is about to kill a guy tomorrow night?
There's going to be an execution in California. The first in how long?
A year or two. Well, I think they did one last year, but it was, in this case, the guy is obviously innocent, or it's such a frame-up that there's something strange about it, because the guy is about to be executed. It's a guy named Kevin Cooper.
Right.
If you go on a website, it's savekevincooper.org, I believe, and he's a black guy, but they found these people all carved up, and they've executed, or they've pinned it on one guy, yet it's impossible. I mean, there were three kids. One survived and said that there were three either white or Hispanic guys. And because, I mean, how can you kill four people, you know, plus one survives? And one person killed four people, that's pretty tough to do.
Yeah, it is.
So they found in the grip of one of the dead a whole bunch of blonde hair. So... well, wait a minute. Something odd about here. And in fact, you know, I mean, it couldn't be a Hispanic hardly if it was blonde hair, you know.
Well, I know. I mean, from what I remember, David, there's a lot of real shaky evidence. And what we found, particularly in where the state that was most under the microscope was Illinois, and there was this tremendous number of people that were exonerated. And when you think about how many people probably went to their deaths. Being innocent, and it's usually the poor, which disproportionately, particularly in California, are Hispanic and African American. David, thanks for calling in from San Francisco. Appreciate it, being our first caller at 313-298-WRIF. Oh yeah, the Grammys are on tonight. Did you see any of that, Rick? George Clinton was up there, you know, singing the Funkadelics. Yeah, it was terrific. But I forgot about this. Somebody just sent me this at calltalkyes@yahoo.com, that the U.S. Denied travel visas to Grammy-nominated Cuban musicians, including the legendary Ibrahim Ferrer, the 76-year-old singer from the Grammy-nominated Buena Vista Social Club, who I saw, and I'm pretty sure he was with him. So he had been in here. And the United States invoked a law that applies to terrorists, drug dealers, and dangerous criminals to deny him a visa. He says, I don't understand because I don't feel I'm a terrorist. I am not. I can't be. Yeah. No, he just plays some of the more wonderful music in the world. But in the, what would you call it? In the phantom world of George W. Bush and the maniacs running his regime, this guy becomes dangerous. Can't let him into the Grammys. Who knows? Maybe he'll show his breast or something. All right, where are we going next? Line three? All right. And didn't Justin Timberlake, I think was my wife told me, apologized? What's up with that? Why apologize? I mean, think about all the sex and violence that's on CBS and all that that's shown on a regular basis. I mean, every time I'm over here and, like, the soaps are on in the middle of the day, I mean, people just laying naked in bed, but they don't show it, right? Isn't it the first thing we all saw? All right, let's go on. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Pete, it's Dave from Detroit.
Hi, Dave.
Yeah, man, what's up? Seems our voting system is still tainted. I got up Saturday morning and went to vote in the primary, and my precinct was locked up tighter than a drum down in the corner.
Wow.
You know, it's like, what, is this what I'm going to have to expect come November when I'm wanting to vote against that smirking chimp we got sitting up there in D.C.?
Did you inquire any further or just give up?
No, I went down there. That's where, since I moved back to Detroit about 7 years ago, I've just voted at the corner school and never had no problems. But, you know, I just went up there and the place was locked up.
Yeah, well...
Closed on the doors and everything, and...
Maybe that wasn't the place. I don't know if it was at all regular voting places.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. But, you know, as far as I was concerned, you know, the day before they were talking on the news, just go to your precinct.
Okay.
It seemed like it was supposed to be a normal routine, but, you know, and they didn't, in a lot of places, I guess, in the Metro Detroit area, Southfield, Detroit, and some other places, a lot of places were just locked up, and they never got their voting machines, and it was like, you know, there was no election at all.
Well, it's going to be pretty interesting when they get all these touchscreen voting machines in that are so susceptible to being hacked. Most of the companies are owned by Republicans, including one.
Halliburton didn't happen to supply those machines.
No, but it's just as bad. There is this Diebold that is a company that's centered in Ohio, and it's owned by a CEO who says he'll do anything to elect George W. Bush. There's another one. A stock is owned in the voting machine company by Republican Senator Chuck Nagel of Oklahoma, and on and on and on. And there's no paper trail at all. Everybody probably doesn't stay up late past 1 a.m. Eastern time when I play these interviews I've done earlier. But a few weeks ago, we had somebody on that said, really, the best way to vote is the old-fashioned Australian ballot. You get a big paper ballot. You get a big crayon. You make an X. And members of our community, of our individual communities, count them up. Then if you want to send in the results via email or something like that, okay. But, we don't have to know the results at, what would it be, like 11 p.m. I mean, better that we should have a system that's verifiable and trusted by everyone than what we're looking at now. All right, Dave, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Peter Werby here with you. Hi, on Night Call. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Mike from Port Huron.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Peter. I was just had a couple thoughts on this gay marriage.
Sure.
About and all this discussion about it being such a threat to the traditional family. I don't hear any mention about divorce. I thought that was about the biggest threat to the traditional family that I see.
Okay.
And what's interesting is that Bush wants to throw $1.5 billion at preserving the right of a man and a woman to get drunk and get married in the Elvis Chapel in Vegas. But somehow a couple of the same sex that have been together and deeply in love for 10, 15, 20 years, whatever.
Or 10 or 15 minutes is none of my business or his. You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying.
I mean, people make mistakes, heterosexuals, homosexuals, everybody. And if we can work, I mean, the thing that militates against the failure of marriage the most is economic difficulties. And when you have a situation where the middle class is losing ground, where the working class is being hit the hardest with the loss of good industrial and union jobs, when you have a disgraceful minimum wage in this country that's the lowest of all the industrial countries in the so-called richest country in the world, well, it's a formula for failed marriages, particularly when everybody in this society has in the middle of their living room this little device that's telling them, consume, consume, consume,
And also the gap in health care.
Sure. Let me tell you about that. Let me say thank you for calling. I'm glad you bring up health care. We're, again, disgracefully, the only Western industrial country without a national health program. Iraq has one. Under Saddam Hussein, and the United States is trying to restore it. Now, the guy that just got the ricin in the mail, the poison, the Senate Majority Leader, Bill Frist, Senator of Tennessee, said that, quote, it is impossible to have all Americans covered by health insurance. He says it's impossible. He said his state was going bankrupt as a result of trying to achieve universal insurance coverage, which is true. I forget, was it 10-care? Isn't that it? Anybody listening in Tennessee, give a call at 313-298-WRIF or you can email me, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He says, impossible to get everybody covered. Absolutely impossible. Well, why can Canada do it? Huh? They're not the greatest country in the world. We are. The United States. USA. USA. So how come Canada can do it in Sweden? How come England can? How come Finland can? Now, why can they do it? Why aren't they going bankrupt? I mean, maybe they're not giving away all their money to the rich and driving themselves deeper and deeper into debt through a deficit as Bush spends more and collects less. Hello? If someone you knew was doing this, ran their economic affairs the way Bush was running the economic affairs of this country, you'd say, something's wrong with this guy. I mean, he was a friend. I mean, he used to have money in the bank. Now he's borrowing more and more and more. And he's borrowing from people that don't really care about him. Not exactly loan sharks, but in the case of the United States, foreign bankers. So when we're paying taxes, rather than getting a national health program so that everyone is covered, what we're getting is what we're, you know, paying for in our taxes is debt service, interest. Bush maxed us out on the national credit card. And just like rich people, that's what, you know, essentially credit debt is all about on credit cards, is rich people loaning money to, you know, to middle class and working class people at high interest rates. That's what's going on here. Japanese bankers, German bankers, what have you. Anyway, so Senator Frist says it's impossible to have all Americans covered by health insurance. So I wonder how come other countries can do it and we can't if we are the best country in the whole world. Part of it is the cost of medical care, cost of pharmaceuticals and what have you. Well, Representative Billy Towson is one of the most influential Republicans on Capitol Hill, is going to retire this year, and guess where he's going to land? He's going to get $2 million a year to head the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America. This is a drug industry trade group that had billions at stake in Medicare prescription drug legislation and won. And guess who helped push this bill through? Billy Towson of Louisiana. This big giveaway to the drug companies. Not going to do much to help seniors in any event. Towson says he's not granting interviews, which I can imagine why. Representative Nancy Pelosi, the Democratic leader of the House, said, if you want to know the price of selling seniors down the river, it's approximately about $2 million a year if you want to hire the manager of the bill on the floor of the House of Representatives. So this is thorough and absolute corruption. Absolute thorough corruption. We're being sold out, and, you know, we go, oh, wow, that's bad. And, you know, there's only, I would say there's two-thirds of you listening that are saying, oh, that's bad. And the other third going, well, I don't see anything wrong with that. Why shouldn't the pharmaceutical companies be able to charge whatever they want? Here's what Craig Holman says from Public Citizen. Representative Billy Towson, who had a key role in writing the Medicare prescription drug law, has received an offer to represent the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America. This is the drug industry's main lobbying group, which was heavily involved in crafting the recently passed legislation for a prescription drug benefit under Medicare. The legislation contains key provisions beneficial to the drug industry. It subsidizes private insurers to provide prescription drug coverage to seniors, thereby increasing demand for drugs, and also bars the Medicare administration from bargaining for lower drug prices. So the Medicare administrator can't even bargain from lower drug prices under this law that Bush-sponsored Billy Towson put through. He gets paid off with $2 million. Now, maybe we should ask the Republicans and the conservatives, I haven't posed this in a long time, is this all a lie or is it okay? I mean, either this isn't true, this has just been made up by the liberal press, or you think it's okay. Or do you want to denounce the corruption, this venal corruption of the Republican Party? It also prohibits the reimportation of lower-priced drugs from Canada. All right, so what are we talking about here? Bush, I expected to find the weapons. Maybe they got, what did he say here? They could have been destroyed during the war. Maybe they were taken to Syria. Maybe they got blown up. I don't know. In the meantime, thousands of Iraqis dead, hundreds of Americans dead, 50 years of strategic alliances down the drain. The United States hated worse than we ever were. And in Afghanistan, poppies, the basis for heroin at a record crop level.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more calls right after this.
3.75%. Hi, this is Ray Vinson, founder of American Equity Mortgage. 3.75%. Just when you thought rates couldn't get any lower, they did. At American Equity Mortgage, where we're now offering 3.75%, whether you're a homeowner with perfect or less than perfect credit, American Equity Mortgage can help you consolidate your high-interest credit card balances and other costly debt into one new low-interest home loan with one new low monthly payment. At American Equity Mortgage, you can get the financial peace of mind that you want. Fast and easy at 3.75%, I guarantee you'll save hundreds of dollars every single month. before rates go up, call American Equity Mortgage and ask about that 3.75%. Call now, 888-229-7699. Call American Equity Mortgage today at 888-229-7699.
Rate subject to change. APR 4.163. Rate subject to increase after consummation.
Open evenings till 8.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRAF, and the best radio website in the world, WRAF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRAF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine Online and eat for less with WRAF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Snooker's Pool and Pub with 5 convenient locations in Metro Detroit. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine Online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Dr. Roach. Put your best pace and body forward with help from Dr. Roach.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
After 25 years in business, Leather Limited has become the nation's second largest chain of leather stores and has filed bankruptcy. The remaining leather coat inventory of 40 unprofitable stores has been brought back to the Detroit area for immediate liquidation. Truckloads of finest quality leather coats will be liquidated for just pennies on the dollar, and most coats are just $28 to $98. This is the world's largest leather coat liquidation in history and will run for a limited time only. Leather Limited has temporarily rented the former F&M drugstore location at 13 Mile and Woodward for this first-time-ever gigantic special event.
Over 20,000!
Finest quality leather coat will be liquidated for just $98 or less. Also included in this bankruptcy sale, leather pants and skirts at $4 enough. Briefcases and purses at $6 enough. Wallet, glove, belt, and more at $4 enough. Don't miss this once-in-a-lifetime bankruptcy leather coat liquidation on Woodward Avenue just north of 13 Mile Road. The gigantic Leather Limited leather coat liquidation daily 9 till 9 for a limited time. 13 Mile and Woodward.
Look for the former F&M store!
So hurry in!
His name is Marcus Allen Washington. Today is his birthday. He weighs just 1 pound, 3 ounces. A breathing machine helps him breathe because his lungs weren't developed before he was born. If you could see this baby, you would see him wince in pain. He lies on his back, connected to tubes and drips and medicine. This is one of the possible effects of smoking during pregnancy. Call 1-800-537-5666 today for your free expectant mother's quit kit. It's designed specifically to help women who are pregnant or are planning on becoming pregnant soon to quit smoking for good. You may not worry about what smoking does to you, but think about what it could do to your baby. Quit before you get pregnant, or if you are pregnant, quit now. Call 1-800-537-5666 today. No one should be born a smoker.
This message brought to you by the Michigan Department of Community Health and the Michigan Association of Broadcasters.
Hi, this is Darvin Ham of the Detroit Pistons. Reading is one of life's essential skills. Between February 1st and February 29th, stop by any participating Detroit area Chevy dealer to donate a new or gently used book. You'll receive a Pistons Buy One, Get One free ticket voucher while helping the Detroit area Chevy dealers and the Pistons drive illiteracy out of the Motor City.
For more information on the Pistons Read to Achieve program, please visit Pistons.com or call 248-377-0100.
You're listening to Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. Our phone number is 313-298-WRIF. If you're on hold trying to get on the show, please stand by. If the lines are busy, please try again.
All right, thank you very much. People want to talk about gay marriage. Some people want to talk about George W. Bush. Was he AWOL? Actually, there is so much on my site, peterwerby.com, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E.com, that if you, I don't know, if you in any way you can think that he was an AWOL, you know, it's the old thing about selling the Brooklyn Bridge. Let's see here. Charles writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Says, Peter, wasn't there a time when homophobe Bush and the GOP pitched less government in our lives? Charles from Ypsilanti, but tonight I'm in Phoenix, Arizona. Yeah. I mean, they were get the government off your back unless it's some, you know, moral issue. Mary, a dislocated Detroiter who now lives in New York City, says, allow gay marriages so they can be just as tired as us straight couples are. I work full-time, go to college full-time, about to start construction of our new home. I'm just too damn tired to have sex. So, if Bush and his Bushies want to stop the gays, allow them all to get married, then they can be just as tired as all of us straight couples are. Well, I don't know. Also New York City, Elmo says, the real question on health care is not how these other countries can afford it. Evidently, they can't. Well, the question is, Elmo's, why can Canada and Finland and everywhere else in the industrial world afford health care for everybody and we can't? Well, of course, all being given away to Bush's buddies, corporations. He says, the real question is how the U.S. got by for all these years with a guaranteed legal defense system. Think about it. One of America's calling cards is that rich or poor, you are guaranteed an attorney in most legal matters. Well, almost it's true in Canada, and it's true in all these other countries as well. There's a big rally, couple thousand. When I say, you know, I say that disparagingly because, for instance, there was 25,000 people at a year ago, say, in Boston, that was saying no reason to go to war against Iraq because there are no weapons of mass destruction. Of course, all the common people were right, and Bush and them at best were wrong, and at worst, which I believe, just lied. But Bob from Groton, Massachusetts, says, I wasn't at the rally today in Boston, which was 2,000 people against gay marriage. And he said, but he attended a pre-rally meeting at my church this morning. This is a fear issue in the hands of a scandal-ridden church hierarchy in a situation entirely parallel to the fear-mongering by the scandal-ridden Bush. And there's more. All this stuff about Cheney and having these meetings, with the Supreme Court Justice Scalia. He said, when I press people to give me a concrete example of harm to marriage about the most concrete fear is that some of the public school teacher might advocate gay marriage and there'd be no way to stop them. Well, if you're heterosexual and someone advocates gay marriage, why would anybody listen to you? Like if you advocate heterosexual marriage to gays, this is so stupid. To them, gay marriage is such an unmitigated horror that this is worth doing anything, regardless of the hurt it causes to gays. Again, it's so parallel to the situation with Iraq. Bush sowed so much dread in the guts of Americans that they're willing to do anything, regardless of the hurt to Iraqis. All right, let's get a little closer to home here. Hi, this is WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter, how you doing? This is Tony from Toledo, Ohio.
Hi, Tony. Are we going to have anybody on from... No, we did. Tony, we welcome people from everywhere, including Toledo. Welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Thanks. I want to touch base a little bit on the Medicare issue.
Yeah.
I have a couple that I'm pretty good friends with, and they're in a situation where he's on disability, and his wife, if she were to get a job and make even just $100 a month, they would cut them off of Medicare, and their son is a severe diabetic, which... he has to have a pump for insulin.
Okay.
So for her to cover the medication just for him, for his insulin, would run them about $3,000 a month. Now, my point is Medicare is kind of messed up the way they got it all set up. They have people that are on dialysis machines that are 90 years old that are pretty much brain dead. I'm not taking away from anybody's family that might have someone in that situation, you know, but they're keeping people alive that they should be letting go. You know, in a sense, where...
Well, I mean, I don't want to make that decision. I mean, unfortunately, the technology that permits...
Yeah, technology is keeping people alive that shouldn't be kept alive. Not that I'm not trying to pull Kevorkian or, you know, where you're advocating euthanasia, but it's draining the Medicare system to where they can't...
Well, there is a lot of that, and I mean, the whole thing is out of whack. I mean, I understand what you're saying, Tony. I mean, that has another aspect of it that is a problem. But the main problem is that all these countries throughout the world must deal with it in some manner or other. All right, thank you very much for joining us at 313-298-WRIF. Ron in Fort Wayne, Indiana, writes into Call Talk. Yes. Hey, Peter, do you know what national health care plan is called? Socialism. Remember, it used to be called socialized medicine, the little PR, right-wing PR phrase. Old people say, oh, I'm sorry, I don't want that. If it's socialism. But Ron says, and guess what? It has been proven in Canada and Europe. It works. What's so bad about that, he asks. Let's get a little closer to home, Royal Oak. And it's Barb. Barb, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
How you doing tonight, Peter?
I'm doing good.
Well, that's we should be sleeping well tonight, knowing that our government is taking good care of us and saving us from weapons of mass destruction and breasts and gay marriage, and they just can't stop thinking about it, can they?
I mean, just somehow this quote, I expected to find the weapons. I mean, if it wasn't so many people had been killed and our fortune, our money wasted, it would almost, he'd be a joke.
Well, it's not a joke, and what we should really be happy about is if you look closely at the names of the people that have been appointed by the fake president to head the WMD Investigations Committee.
Oh, yeah.
Do you recognize the name of Lawrence Silberman?
I do, and I actually was remiss in not bringing that all up. So Bush said first that we don't need any commission to look at the faulty intelligence, but then he realized, you know, one of his puppet masters must have said, you know, this is looking bad, it's not playing well in the polls. So he appointed one, and it has the chair of Charles Robb, is it? Is it Charles?
Chuck Robb.
Chuck Robb. Oh, yeah. There you go.
Well, that's
you, you know him a little better than I do. You call him Chuck.
Well,
I call
no.
him Charles. And Lawrence Silberman, who, Barb, is?
He is the judge that overturned all of the favorable rulings in the Detroit newspaper strike and basically gave us our defeat.
Yeah.
Those of us who work there, that won court case after court case after court case, and he reversed all the findings in a 5.5 month trial after 5 years of testimony. It's been called "Let's give them a fair trial and then hang them" by local pundits. But you know, so I feel much better about that. I'm sure he's going to find nothing.
Well, let's see here. This is from the Interpress Service. George W. Bush's choice to co-chair his commission to investigate intelligence failures prior to Iraq War is a longtime right-wing political activist closely tied to the neoconservative network that led the pro-war propaganda campaign. Don't they ever do anything that's not a fix? The fix is in.
They can't win if they don't fix it.
Well, but when this comes out before the election, want to make them look bad?
Well, I do what I can.
Barb, Barb.
Yes.
They're not going to. It's going to come out after the election. They've rigged that as well, just in case there's anybody on this Warren Commission or what's it called? Not the Warren Commission, that comes up with saying, "Hey, you know, you actually guys, you were not only were you wrong, but you rigged the intelligence." It's going to come after they hope that Bush is reelected. So, it's a scam right from the beginning.
Right. And even if they do, and even if these guys, against all odds, were to find evidence just so blatant that even they couldn't ignore it, you know, I believe that, a lot of people do, that right before, about a month before the election, Bush is going to pull Osama bin Laden out of his spider hole.
Well, I think...
And everybody will be happy, and we, the bad guys, are gone.
I don't know.
Every day, what is it, five guys? Five Americans and a lot more Iraqis that people don't even bother counting.
Yeah, there is just a sad article. I mean, I'm to the point where I've got everything pretty messed up from the Los Angeles Times. Soldiers meet their death in Iraq at 18. Of more than 500 U.S. troops killed in Iraq, seven were just 18 years old. One embittered father says it's a big waste of his life. I mean, actually, the article was so sad, I couldn't even finish it. But let me go back to Silberman, who is the co-chair, along with ex-Virginia Senator Charles Robb, who's pretty conservative himself. Silberman was served as part of former Republican President Ronald Reagan's senior campaign staff. He played a key role in setting up secret contacts between the Reagan-Bush campaign before they were even in it, which people have charged violated international law. But they set up this contact between the campaign of Bush and Reagan and Bush in 1980 and the Islamic government in Tehran that were holding U.S. hostages. Remember that whole deal?
Yeah.
And that was the October surprise. The Islamic government agreed to release the hostages right at the right time. Now, the one other person I mean, in what is a commission supposed to do? They're supposed to investigate things, right? Well, why bother? John McCain, who's on there, has already said he did not believe that Bush had manipulated the information. So, I mean, case closed. Why wait for 5 months after the election? He says, the President of the United States, I believe, did not manipulate any kind of information for political gain or otherwise. Well, how does he know? He hasn't even begun the investigation.
Well, he's been in politics long enough to know perfectly well what's going to happen. I mean, John McCain didn't get there by being dumb.
Yeah, I suppose.
You know, I mean, and I think that people hold out the hope that he's the closest to having integrity.
Sorry.
You know, I know. I'm not one of those people. This whole thing is just a farce being played out, you know, a little farther and farther. For me, there's just thousands of people like that. I have a family member that left this week for the Sunni Triangle.
Wow.
And I turned on 60 Minutes tonight, and there's a story about how that's like one of the most dangerous places on earth. I can only hope that his mother wasn't watching it because she's having a bad enough time. But it's really stunning. He's in the Special Forces of the Marines, and those guys aren't going to do anything but take industrial-sized cans of whoop-ass to anybody that's in their path.
Mm.
They're not going to occupy. They're going to completely smash the insurgents. And whoever gets in the way is going to be in the way.
Well, what are the casualties on the part of the insurgents? We never hear that. There's, 522. I mean, there's been quite a few Iraqi civilians killed.
The American casualties barely count.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to bother, you know, counting the people that were over there to liberate, because that's depressing.
Mm-hmm.
It gets people on the other side.
It's not good news.
Not good news. In the stories that I hear, my family member closest to the one that's going went out to San Diego to say goodbye, and she said that the gloom on the base, nobody believes in this very deeply anymore. Everybody thinks that it's going to come out badly. It's palpable how depressing it is out there, out west, where these guys were all going.
Right. Well, Barb, thank you so much.
Have a good night.
Appreciate it. Thanks for joining us at 313-298-WRIF. Victor writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com, talking about health care and the United States disgracefully being the only industrial country in the world that doesn't have a national health system. He says one of the reasons other countries can afford health care for their citizens is that they don't meddle in other nations' business and they do not have the need for a defense budget as large as the U.S. does. Well, that's sure true. Let's continue on. Hi, it's Peter Werby, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Pete. This is Dave from Durand.
Hi, Dave. From where? Where are you calling from?
Durand, Michigan.
Oh, yeah, I know where Durand is, yeah.
Yeah, well, your call screener never heard of it.
It's up. Isn't it up near Port Huron?
No, it's about 14 miles west of Flint on the south side of I-69.
Actually, that's what I meant. Go ahead.
I did my time in the military in two different stretches back during Korean War times.
Okay.
And when you're discharged, you get three documents. One is the so-called honorable discharge or other kind of discharge. That you frame and hang on your wall.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get a wallet-sized card that has your name and service number on one side of it, and on the other side of it, it has the period of active duty from date to date.
Okay.
The final date. But the real governing document is called a DD-214. It's 8.5 by 11 sheet. It has the real data on it, periods of active duty from to, duty stations during that period of active duty, last pay grade.
Okay. Now, does this apply to Bush?
It applies to every man that was ever discharged from the U.S. military.
Well, I'm wondering, Dave, but you're telling me this for some reason, right? Which is?
Well, they're hanging their hat on now. He says he had an honorable discharge, but
mm-hmm.
there seems to be a gap in service there.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely a big gap.
DD-214. That's the real governing document. This sounds like spin from some White House staffer that doesn't know how the military works.
Well, I think you're right. Thanks for the info.
So go after that. The DD-214, if you had more than one period of active service, you'll have a DD-214 for each period of active service. Let them produce that, and we'll see if whether he's shirk duty or not.
Well, thank you, Dave.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Thanks for joining us. Roy, listening in Placitas, Rio Rancho, New Mexico, says, Shrub trying to prove he wasn't AWOL because he got an honorable discharge is like the guy who burned his house down. Everyone in the neighborhood knew he burned it down. He thinks he's being logical as he tells everyone he couldn't have done it because the insurance company paid him off and they wouldn't have paid it if he had burned it down. I'm going to think about that one, Roy. I'm gonna do that. All right, we have one more. Let's take a break right now.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more calls right after this.
Around the corner, around the country, at work or play, we're on the way to convenience stores of Speedway.
At my Speedway, we take pride in serving the best cup of coffee in town.
Here's Speedway store manager, Sherry Erskine.
That means it's always hot, always fresh, all the varieties that you want, including our new 100% Colombian coffee. Customers can even mix and match to make their own special blend. And right now at Speedway, any size coffee or cappuccino is just 79 cents.
That's right. Any size, always hot, always fresh coffee or cappuccino is now just 79 cents, only at Speedway.
At my Speedway, you always find great values, great prices. You've got my word on it.
The convenience stores of Speedway.
Now at Speedway, mix and match any brand of ice-cold 20-ounce soft drinks. Now two for just $2. Plus, enjoy two regular-size Oscar Mayer hot dogs, fresh off the grill, fixed just the way I like them, for just 99 cents, only at Speedway.
We're on your way to the convenience stores of Speedway.
One of rock's most influential bands returns to celebrate 35 years of groundbreaking music. Yes. John Anderson, Steve Howe, Chris Squire, Alan White, and Rick Wakeman. The 35th Anniversary Tour. Saturday, May 8th at the Palace of Auburn Hills. The Yes You've Been Waiting For. The Ultimate Yes 35th Anniversary Collection Double CD, along with the new DVD documentary, Yes Speak, in stores now. The legend continues. Celebrate 35 years of Yes in one magical night. Saturday, May 8th at the Palace of Auburn Hills. Tickets are on sale now. CC.com, PalaceNet.com, The Palace Box Office, and all Ticketmasters. Target 248-645-6666. Yes. Brought to you by Budweiser True Music.
Men, how do you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtral, the new climax control system for men. Maxtral lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtral is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of stamina you want and a woman never forgets. Maxtral is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make the pleasure go on and on with Maxtral, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtral or call now and try Maxtral risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708. Prolong the pleasure, maximize the control, and see how much longer you last with Maxtral. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708. Do you feel like half the man you used to be? Do you feel tired and irritable? Are you losing your sex drive? If so, you could have low testosterone.
I'm Dr. Richard Cohen, MD, men's health specialist. Testosterone levels can fall rapidly after age 35, but now you can boost your testosterone naturally. Introducing Testostazine, the powerful new testosterone-boosting system I developed for men who are starting to feel their age. Testostazine supports your body's ability to produce testosterone the way you did when you were younger, so you can restore your energy, youthful sex drive, and staying power. Testosterone keeps a man energetic and sexually confident. You can feel that way no matter what your age. Testostazine can help.
Call now for your risk-free confidential trial of testosterone.
Call 1-800-807-8108. 1-800-807-8108. Guaranteed to work for you or your money back. Call 1-800-807-8108. Results will vary.
You're listening to Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. Our phone number is 313-298-WRIF. If you're on hold trying to get on the show, please stand by. If the lines are busy, please try again.
All right, thank you very much. Broadcasting from WRIF in Detroit, Michigan. And why do I have the Michigan? Because increasingly we're getting people listening from all around the country and all around the world. You can always email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. A lot of you are. And we're talking about gay marriages. The pathetic George Bush, every time he opens his mouth, in this case, in response to the Massachusetts court decision that gays are human beings and should be allowed to marry like anyone else, he says marriage is a sacred institution between man and woman. And a letter writer says that government is not in the business of making things sacred. Yeah, get the government off of everyone's back, including our gay friends, neighbors, family members, what have you. Also, has he even got a free pass from Tim Russert on Meet the Press? He says, I expected to find the weapons. They could have been destroyed during the war. Saddam and his henchmen could have destroyed them as we entered into Iraq. They could be hidden. They could have been transported to another country. The Venusian space fleet may have sucked them up. Where, you know, I don't think so. He didn't say the last thing. Wasn't there another? Oh, yeah. George Bush, AWOL. This is from Deborah in Denver. She writes in, Kevin Drum at CalPundit. That's CalPundit.com. And we were just talking with Dave from Duran, Michigan, and he was talking about these documents where you can tell fully not just whether you get an honorable discharge, but where you, whether you are actually serving. And Deborah in Denver says, Cal Drum at Cal Pundit has dug up an untorn version of the infamous torn document among Bush's military service records. It is a record of W's accumulation of discipline points. Apparently, he was removed from active duty and put on ARF, A-R-F, which is a kind of service with no actual service paper detail as a result of something in September 1972. Well, she says more and a better explanation at Cal Pundit, Let's say that right. CalPundit. And I'm looking at it, and it's too much for me to go through. That may be a little ARF. No, this is not the sound that Barney makes when the White House staff is late with dinner. Rather, it's the beginning of yet another intriguing mystery regarding George Bush's service in the Air National Guard. To begin, you need to recall. No, it's way, going to be way too long. You can take a look at it yourself. CalPundit.com. I'll try to link it up. Also on my website, peterwerby.com, W-E-R-B-E.com. There's enough there to just anybody who doesn't think that, after reading all this stuff, that doesn't think that George W. Bush was AWOL. You know, I don't even know what to say. All right, back to our telephones. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter. Daryl from Clinton Township. How you doing?
Daryl, is it?
Yeah.
From Clinton Township.
The next caller.
Yeah, what?
I queue back to me after the next caller.
Okay.
I really appreciate that. I want to get on, so.
What are you saying? You're on the air right now.
Oh, no, it's just that I got a customer. I'm at work.
Okay, go ahead. I see. Is he a petroleum transfer agent? You know, people up at that time. I got you. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air.
Hello. My name is Audrey. I'm at my son's house. Timmy's house in Flat Rock.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually from Florida, but I'm up here for a funeral.
Okay. Sorry to hear that.
The funeral of Private First Class Holly Magoo. She's our soldier from Michigan that was killed in Iraq.
Oh, boy.
And I just wanted to let people know that, you know, we're losing too many of these boys and girls in this war for nothing as far as we're concerned. We stuck our nose in, and, you know, I don't know how else to put it. There is one thing I would like to do, if it's all possible. Can
please.
I read you something?
Please, Audrey.
Okay. Holly is another reminder that our freedom truly is not free. Holly paid the ultimate price for all of us without complaint or regret. All of us need to remember that there are literally thousands of brave soldiers still serving and fighting in Iraq and around the world for our freedom and others. Please stand behind our soldiers and their families and show your support. We want to do this, but we don't need to be pushed into this by somebody like Bush.
You know, Audrey, I mean, I'm so sorry, you know, that this happened, and to get your call, and you know, and there's a tendency on shows like this to kind of remove the human element and only think about it in terms of politics and policy decisions, and you forget that there are human beings over there that are losing their lives.
Exactly. Now, she was with the 4th Infantry.
Yeah.
And they're the ones that found Saddam hiding in his hole.
Mm-hmm.
And why, you know, we all know, or I think we all know, this is one reason Bush is over there. He's going to get rid of this man that his father left behind. That's what we all think anyway.
Yeah.
And it's a dirty shame that we have to lose somebody as beautiful as Holly. 19 years old.
Oh, man.
And it was my niece's daughter. And it just, it's really been bad, you know?
It must be, and you know, you get to be a certain age, and it, you know, you know that they're really adults and carrying out an adult duty, but it's pretty easy when you get to a certain age just to think of someone 19 years old as a child.
Right.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, this is the first war that we've had females on the front fighting. I believe they were there maybe in 91 in Iraq.
Right.
But I don't know how many were on the front. But this makes Holly the second female. It's a terrible way for to become famous, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but, you know, it's heartbreaking.
It is. And Audrey, please express on my behalf and in a sense everyone who's listening, because I mean, if everyone's tear ducts aren't being tugged at the way mine are, I don't think they're much of a human being.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, there's one thing I'd like for them to play there at some time. Yeah. There's a song called When I'm Gone,
mm-hmm.
by the Three Doors Down.
Yeah.
It brought tears to my eyes when I heard it. And the live version where they're talking before singing the song, it is the most beautiful thing. And this should be dedicated to our soldiers, every one of them.
Absolutely.
That
and
have not come back.
And you know, Audrey, this is mostly just talk. I mean, mostly this is a music station, so it'll, you know, maybe be a couple of hours, but I'll see in a while. Well,
okay,
thank you.
That's fine.
Thank you for our call, and again, all the condolences and sympathies that we can muster here. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's right. They're real human beings. One of the things we're talking about is healthcare too. David writes in, "Hey Peter, one of your teen listeners. And, you know, I'm sorry. By the way, I hope no one who is 19 or younger or a little older, when I say that it's easy to see a 19-year-old as a child, I think in death and in, you know, sacrifice for Bush's war. I mean, that's I have great respect for people of all ages and people that are involved in adult roles. You know." So, I mean, that wasn't a put-down or anything like that. Anyways, David writes, one of your teen listeners, I just want to tell you, I saw the, on my website, the I Hate Republicans song. It was pretty good, but the thing I don't like about it are the pictures comparing Bush and Hitler. Are those on there? I don't know. I can't get it up here. Hitler was a far more evil person than Bush can ever be. Yeah. Well, what did Margaret Cho said? Give him a chance. Or what did she say? Something like that. Thanks for your service on the air. Live long and free. Thank you so much. Anything more here? No. All right. We will move on to line number two. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening. Hey, are you back yet, Daryl? All right. Daryl's going to have to be history. He's, what did he say? He had a customer. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening. Are you with me? No, you're not either. All right, some open lines at 313-298-WRIF. Peter Werby at your service, taking the calls after you speak to our producer and phone screener, Rick Fox. Hi, it's Night Call, and you're on the air.
Hello, Peter.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well.
Good. This is Newt from Woodhaven.
Hi, Newt.
I wanted to ask you, you had mentioned before about the war not being about oil, and anybody who thought that was, you know, pretty preposterous to think that.
Wait a minute. I said it was about, in a good part, about oil, or one of the reasons was about oil.
Okay. Could you clarify that?
Well, these people are beholden to these oil companies. They want to control the strategic resources, which is oil, the strategic resource of oil in the Middle East, that which remains. You know, the world is about to reach its peak production. It'll start declining from there. And the idea that the Middle East, that the majority of oil is was controlled by somebody like Saddam Hussein, a totally unstable government, eventually will be unstable, Saudi Arabia and Iran, is pretty frightening. And the idea would be, of course, would be to say, let's get off the addiction of oil because it's poisonous to the atmosphere. It makes a mess wherever it goes, and it creates wars. So rather than thinking, let's figure out some ways to get off of oil, Bush Co. Decides, let's cut right through it all and invade and occupy, essentially, oil. Are you with me?
Yeah.
Okay.
That sort of explains it for me.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for joining me. About that song, I Hate Republicans, and whether we should be hating. Debbie in Boston writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He says, I think your topic of hate, especially in a broader sense, is really interesting. There's so much in the world to be angry and sad about. It wells up, and then what to do with it? I end up really struggling to not hate, usually failing. She says, I don't know how you put up with so many of your callers. You're so zen with them. I like that about listening to you. It helps me chill out because you're giving them and me facts, ideas, news in a clear and rational way. Sometimes you'll have to tell me your method for a long life doing what you're doing. I don't have a clue. I don't know. Another one. Warren writes in. Just started listening to your archived shows at White Rose. If you go to On the Air on my website, you can get rebroadcasts from a number of sites. He said, I learned a lot. If you think someone needlessly killed tens of thousands in your name with your money, if you cannot hate that person, then who the hell can you hate, he says. I feel more pity for all the innocents killed by this war criminal and his gang. Talking about Bush. All right. Where are we going, Rick? Why? There's something in this studio. That's all right. No? Just my throat? All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air.
Hi, happy to be. I was going to say a couple points, if I could.
Sure.
I'm born to be a Republican, and I don't, you know, I have children, and the gay TV shows on TV are kind of appalling that they're forcing this gayness on the public, you know, and it's just such a smaller minority to force it on. I'm not into gay bashing or.
Wait a minute. How are they forcing it? How are they forcing it? Are they simply people that have a different definition of the majority want the same rights as everybody else? You know, up till the late '60s, it was illegal in many states for African Americans and Euro Americans to marry.
It's just icky, you know.
What's icky?
The men kissing or to be together, it's just icky.
How about two women? Ooh, that's a
I heard other people arguing.
How about this? How about if we just let women marry and then we can kind of fantasize what they do?
Don't cut me off.
I'm not cutting you off.
I heard other people. Okay.
I'm asking you, how about that? Huh?
Death tax?
What's the word you're saying?
Death tax.
Death tax. Let's go back to the gays. How about, so you don't mind what two women do together, right? That's kind of cool. That's kind of, in fact, sexy and popular these days.
A lot of more folks accept that than the other. But even that on the shows, I have both male and female children, and both sides are icky.
Well, you know, I don't want to, I don't think we should run a country, nor do I think that people that are gay should be affected in terms of what you think is icky.
Can I go on to another issue?
No, we got to stay on this one. I mean, people in the South particularly thought that blacks and whites having sexual union and marriage was pretty icky, too. In fact, it was one of the most icky things that they could imagine. In fact, when they often found out about it, that black people were lynched because they thought it was icky. Now, I'm not trying to compare that, but what I'm saying is you don't want to allow rights to be determined by individual tastes or their own particular theology. It sounds like since you've got children, you've married a woman. So what do you care if a guy down the street marries a guy? What's it to you?
Well, I don't know. I just would have thought my boy would marry a girl and give offspring and grandchildren.
Well, I suspect they will. I mean, you have 85% to 15% a chance. And actually, you know, I know parents of gay men who are very supportive of their gay children, but are a little disappointed that they're not going to have grandchildren. But, hey, my wife and I never had any children either, so maybe our parents were a little disappointed. But you have to, come to some peace with the choices that your children make that may not be the ones that you want. But I suspect that that your children are safe from the gay menace. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF. Social policy cannot be determined by icky, right? WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hello, Mr. Werby.
Hi, who's this?
This is Anthony from Wyandotte.
Hi, Anthony.
Hey, I just want to thank you for your guts to come out the way you do, because, man, I listen to the show. I'm only 21, and me and my 18-year-old brother, we love you so much. We listen to you every Sunday night, and, I mean, we just love the way you speak, what you feel, and, I mean, because sometimes I'll watch and I'll see Bush speaking, and it makes me sick. And I listen to you for the real facts, and I want to thank you for that.
Well, I appreciate
it. For an alternative. That's what I want to thank you for.
Well, I really appreciate it. But on the other hand, Anthony, really, it doesn't take any guts. And I probably have 35 friends at least, if someone would let them on Detroit radio station, would do the same thing. And you know what? If someone said, Anthony, come on down, we're going to let you broadcast after Peter goes off the air, wouldn't you be saying the same thing, or some variant of it?
You know, you're right, but you just speak it so smart and eloquently. I mean, it's just I would argue with my, because a couple of my family members, I mean, they make a bunch of money, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're Republicans, but then if I can't speak against them because I don't make any money, but if I could speak the way you speak, then I could shred them. But man, with your smartness, I mean, that you would shred them. And
well, I've been at it a while, for one thing. And here's another thing. The conservatives and Republicans, they can say one thing, and you're stuck, like, spending almost an hour trying to refute it, because the mainstream corporate and conservative media gives people all the information to be these passive, submissive, citizens of the empire. So, I mean, I'm trying to think of something. You give all, I mean, like when the run-up to the Iraq War, you would put forth, or I would put forth, all these arguments. There are no weapons of mass destruction. I mean, I knew this over a year ago. I mean, Bush says, well, I thought there were weapons, But I knew that there weren't. I knew that, that the results that this was going to bring about, that the Iraqi people weren't going to, throw flowers in the paths of the 101st Airborne and all that. But so I'd say all this, and then some conservatives say, why won't you support America? Not even why won't you support the policies of George W. Bush, but why won't you support America? And so this, they're not even, they're not even interested in rational discourse and discussion of issues. They want to find out how they can submit to authority. And, I mean, in some cases, they're rich. They're just trying to figure out how they can, what they want to conserve is the amount of money they have. But anyways, don't despair.
Can I say one more thing?
Sure.
I just got to ask a question. It's like my dad and stepmom, I mean, they don't make any money. My dad, he's working at the same place for 50, 15 years. You don't even make $10 an hour. My staff, I don't even make $6. And the Republican and only the thing about abortion. Which
wait. They make $6 an hour and $15 an hour, and the Republicans?
No, my dad makes, he's been working at the same place for 15 years. He makes like $9 an hour. My stepmom's working at the same place for 10 years, and she don't even make $6 an
hour. You know what I call that, Anthony? Criminal. I mean, people talk about this being the best country in the world. I call that a criminal system that would have hardworking people that are the backbone of this country and probably their communities and raising families being forced to live on wages like that. Whereas I was looking at the New York Times today, and I'm looking at apartments that are selling for $15 million. That people have that much disposable income that they can spend that on housing, and that there's that much amount of money that accrues to the small percentage of the population, and when you add it all up, that's why other people are being paid $6 an hour.
Yeah, you're right. I just want to thank you, and I just want to say God bless you, and keep doing what you're doing, because you know it makes a difference, and I appreciate what you have to say.
Thank you, Anthony. I appreciate it. 313-298-WRIF. I'm Peter Werby. Man, more. From St. Mary's, Ohio, it is Kevin who says, to all those who feel that Bush's filthy service record does not matter, go to the Vietnam Wall in D.C. and tell the 40,000 names on that wall that it doesn't matter. Because essentially, Bush scammed out of, not essentially, why do I say that? He scammed out of the draft. Rich kid, rich father, don't want to keep him out of harm's way. And you had two rich kids, John Kerry, George Bush. John Kerry enlists, gets wounded, saves people. George Bush gets, in fact, he even got in the Texas Air National Guard, got bumped up ahead of other people because, you know, people were trying to get out of the war big time, most people. Yeah, and so the middle class had all sorts of scams with doctors and what have you. And the rich, they could do things like, Poppy did for his kid. See, Kevin says from St. Mary's, thanks for all you do, Pete. I work in radio down here, and I'm surrounded by right-wingers. That's sad. It's sad indeed. Let's go out to Santa Cruz, California, and pick up Billy. Billy, hi, it's Peter Werby, and you're on the air.
California loves you.
Okay. Cool. I love California.
Yeah, Peter, so, you know, this thing with the, the bad timing by the Massachusetts courts, you know?
Yeah.
Well, because being Bush haters, we are really energized, and we're going to get out to the polls. And now that we're going to be fighting over gay marriage, that's going to get the right wing out to the polls. I just wish they'd done the same decision on November 20th.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. But you know what? I don't think they're going to be more energized than usual. They're, you know, the third of the country that... what do I always say, that you can fool all the time?
Yeah. That's sort of the interesting thing. You know, people don't understand democracy at all.
Yeah.
Here's what they don't understand. It doesn't matter what I want to accept or you want to accept or 60 or 70 or 80% of us want to accept. Some stuff is wrong. For example, not that long ago, there were laws against blacks and whites marrying each other.
I just mentioned that.
And... is there anyone that thinks we need those laws again and that that would be okay?
Well, there are some, and I think they're rooted in the same group, right, that thinks that gays shouldn't marry.
But, the true shame of it is to think about taking the Constitution and changing it so that we can put bigotry into the Constitution.
Yeah.
That's horrifying. Oh, by the way, one more thing.
Sure.
While they have it open, once the Constitutional Convention is on to put bigotry back in,
yeah.
One of the Republicans also has an amendment to allow foreigners to be able to be president so that Schwarzenegger can become our next president.
Sure, why not? Why don't we change it all? In fact, why don't we just scrap the current one, get rid of the Bill of Rights, and start all over again? And maybe we could put, kind of have an amended version of, not amended, what would you say, an edited version of the Ten Commandments.
Well,
thou shalt not kill except in preemptive wars.
Right, yeah. Unless somebody's from a different tribe than you or has something
thou
you
shalt
want.
Not, thou shalt not steal unless it's oil from another country. You can have all that. Why not? Billy, thank you.
You're welcome, buddy.
Appreciate it. Always a pleasure to talking to the man from Santa Cruz, California, from Marlette, Michigan. Dan writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. His one caller said that the gay issue is being pushed on us by TV. Did they? Did someone say that? Oh, yeah. You're right. I'm sorry. Dan, you are absolutely 100% correct. If there wasn't a market for these programs, the networks and cables wouldn't put them there. And my point, the right keeps saying gay marriage is a destabilizer to the country. And he, Dan, asked the question of the evening, how? The problem with this country today is that 80% of the population doesn't think they can think for themselves and must be led by the righteous right. Thanks, Peter. Keep up the great work. Well, the only thing I think, Dan, I disagree with you, is that 80% of the people are in that category. I'm maybe a little more hopeful than you are. People tend to think of small towns as conservative and Republican. And like Kevin said from, where was that? The town in Ohio. You know, like I don't ever meet any conservatives hardly, except when I come to work and talk to Meltdown, the evening jock here at WRIF. So, I mean, I'm surrounded by liberals and progressives and leftists and gay people. You know, I mean, I function right in the Ferndale, Royal Oak area and downtown. Like that. So this isn't so weird to me. I mean, it's weird. If I was in a room and someone said, well, I'm going to vote for George W. Bush, I mean, I think, like, people would be, like, totally horrified. Wouldn't believe it. All right, let me see. We're going to line two. I believe it is. Hi, it's WRIF. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hello, Pete. This is Joe from Royal Oak.
Hi, Joe.
Hi. I see the media is, once again, folks, and who served and who didn't in Vietnam, and that's going to be a campaign issue, and including you, you're on it again. And I hear Kerry talk about Band of Brothers, and he trots out his veterans to use his stage props. You know, Howard Dean was saving lives in inner-city emergency rooms. I think that counts as something, too.
Well, you know, I don't – all those politicians, man. I mean, Kerry included.
Well, okay. Well, let me tell you, I'm a progressive, and I vote all the time. I voted yesterday. And if it comes down between Kerry and Bush, I'm going to vote for Bush, and I've never voted for a Republican in my life.
Really? Why?
Because if Kerry becomes president, that means the last three of the four presidents came from the same club.
The Skull and Bones.
Yeah, and this looks like a consolidation of power, and there's an agenda being pushed here. And I think if Bush remains in office, he's going to be tied. He's going to have a straight jacket on him. No one's going to believe what he says, and it's going to be less likely that he's going to put our troops in misadventures around the world. Whereas you put Kerry in there, he's going to have a honeymoon. There's going to be the lefties will less likely be critical of him, and he could end up making Johnson look like a peacenik.
Well, that did happen with Clinton and Gore. I mean, Clinton and Gore were perceived as these great liberals, which they weren't, and really good on the environment, which they weren't. I mean, in contrast to Bush and the damage he's done to the environment at the behest of mining and other despoilers of the environment is pretty severe. Clinton and Gore actually got a free pass from many people that should have known better. But, Joe, I think it's a little cockeyed thinking. Although,
Wait. I'm telling you, people don't know about Kerry. I mean, he comes from the same group of people, the same friends. He has friends that's making money on these wars. Yeah, he's married to a billionaire.
Yep.
And I think the media is anointing John Kerry, and the people are all going along with it, except the young people. Where I've been reading, the young people, it looks like, are now turning out, whereas they were excited and energized with Dean, and now they're just turning out now. I was reading in the Detroit News last week.
Are you going to
vote for the same thing? You know, it's time for a change.
Well, I agree there's time for a change, but, I mean, wait a minute, Joe. You say it's time for a change, and you say you're going to re-elect the farthest right-wing administration in American history, the most corrupt since when? Since Reagan, I guess.
He could very well be impeached if he gets a second term.
Well, I've got some friends that say, give Bush a second term, it'll bring on the revolution that we need.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Joe.
All right, well, I'm just saying, Dean is not the same, even though he was grew up kind of wealthy.
Kerry. Oh, Dean's not different. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he grew up kind of wealthy, but he's not controllable, and that's why the mass media didn't want him, and the mass media put a concerted effort on Dean when in December he went on Hardball and talked about re-regulating the communications industry.
That was his butt.
Yep.
All right, thank you. Appreciate it, Joe. Thanks for calling in from Royal Oak. Neil in Albuquerque writes, it's necessary, let me see, is it necessary to have all of the facts when speaking about such things as your previous caller who talked about Bush and the DD-214? From my own experience, this discharge thing, I do know that the DD-214 is given at the time of separation from active duty, and the honorable discharge is given at the completion of one's military commitment. In my case, the latter came several years after the former. For the caller, from his description, these two milestones may have occurred simultaneously. I don't know, Neil. This is not clarifying things for me. I do not know if the DD-214 applies to the National Guard, though. The fact that the Army, the branch I served in, is under federal jurisdiction and the National Guard is under state jurisdiction may have a bearing on the Bush situation. Whew. Don't know. But, All right. Well, I'm so wrapped up in this. Got to do this, and we'll be right back.
You're locked on at WRIF.com. We'll get back to more Riff Raff in just a moment.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We tried calling this guy, got this woman, and she made the mistake of hanging up on us.
Well, we didn't hear the why'd you hang up?
I have company and I am busy.
Oh, well, you say usually when people hang up, I don't know if you're new, if you just got citizenship, usually people say goodbye before they hang up the telephone.
I told you I had to go.
I remember you were laughing about the erection, but...
No, I said I had to go, no, and I'm hanging up. Goodbye.
People, usually, yeah, say goodbye.
Wait,
that's good. You learn.
Yeah, okay.
She didn't have any company. What is she talking about?
Liar. Yeah, I know. People lie in a...
Wait, let's call back and say we're a caterer. And
then if she says,
nobody over here, they'll say, liar!
Let me tell you what's really going to happen. You're going to call up as the so-called caterer, and she's going to be, I just talked to you. I said goodbye.
You never know.
If it's in Vegas as a bet, I'm not so sure I'm going to put any money on this.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm looking for you. This is a caterer. You having a party over there?
Not today.
By God.
You lied. You said you had company, lady.
I have company, but I don't have a party going on.
That's hilarious.
You lied.
You lied.
That sounds good.
And Mike. In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's good.
101.1 WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Amigos and Taylor in Woodhaven.
You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's 5 best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
We'll get back to more Riff Raff in just a moment. This is 101 WRIF, broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. Thanks for listening.
Twice is nice. Tuesday on the Riff.
Everyone, listen up.
Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Tuber Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Riff Rock band.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Who's your boy?
Tuber Tuesday.
Double the Riff Rock.
Double the Riff prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Tuber Tuesday on the Riff. From 101 WRIF. If it rocks.
If it really rocks.
Rocks.
Now,
begin transmission.
Here comes the music.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Bellasino's Pizza and Grinders with 18 locations, one near you. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's five best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save.
With the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We were talking with Robert Porche about some of the reasons Barry Sanders left the Lions, especially the non-signing of Kevin Glover.
Kevin Glover, you heard him a lot, especially when his replacement was Jim Pine,
who
was at the time the guard for Tampa Bay. And what was so funny about the whole situation was the fact that whenever we would play Tampa Bay, Jim Pine would be the guy that was singled out as the weakest link on their offensive line that we were always trying to get a singles on.
Ouch.
So from a defensive line standpoint, everything was geared toward...
There's something called the World Business Forum, isn't it? The World Economic Forum. And these are the elites. They're the ones that want to privatize water, sell it back to people. You know, and these are the people that want to can condemn a forest that's a natural habitat and to, you know, to becoming timber and all. But under Bush, the system's become 100% a racket, and they're shameless about it. You know, I suspect that Cheney will not be the vice presidential candidate. And the fact that John McCain of Arizona is saying in advance of this intelligence commission meeting to see whether or not it was faulty, what do you mean to see if it was faulty intelligence? They were wrong. There are no weapons of mass destruction and weren't. Anyways, how did I get off on that? Oh, yeah, Cheney's probably out of there. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, he led the theft of the 2000 election. Pardon me. And he traveled as an official guest of Vice President Dick Cheney on a small government jet that served as Air Force Two. And the pair came to Paterson, Louisiana last month to hunt ducks. So what's wrong with that? But the revelation, this is from the L.A. Times, casts further doubt about whether Scalia can be an impartial judge in Cheney's upcoming case before the Supreme Court. Now, a liberal and a conservative group have brought Cheney to court demanding that he release the minutes to show who was at this energy meeting that determined energy policy. Well, of course, who it was Ken Lay and the Enron boys. Remember, that's why the whole thing with Iraq was started. I mean, this was long-range plans to invade Iraq and occupy it. But they decided to do it like in August of 2002 because the Enron scandal and Enron closely connected to George W. and to Poppy threatened to unravel the Bush government even worse than it already was. So, hey, let's... he's got weapons of mass destruction. Anyways, the hunting trip took place just weeks after the High Court agreed to take up Cheney's bid to keep secret the details of his energy policy task force. So he wants secret government. According to those who met them at the small airstrip, the justice and the vice president flew from Washington on January 5th and were accompanied by a second backup Air Force jet that carried staff and security aides of the vice president. Also, two military Black Hawk helicopters were brought in and hovered nearby as Cheney and Scalia were whisked away in a heavily guarded motorcade to a secluded private hunting camp owned by an oil industry businessman. I mean, this is so corrupt that it absolutely defies the imagination. Here is Cheney giving away America to the energy barons, the major polluters, the Enrons. He he's going to come before the U.S. Supreme Court. One of the justices, who is a rabid right-winger, Antonin Scalia, they go hunting together in advance of the decision-making. I can say, well, Scalia said somewhere in here, let me see if I can find that. No, he said, I do not think my impartiality could reasonably be questioned. Well, maybe not. Let's say that this does not have that effect. I mean, it's all set up in advance in any event. So in that regard, he's probably right. But it should not have the appearance of impropriety either. Pardon me, because it erodes confidence in the justice system. So how much does this all cost? This guy's going to go duck hunting. Cheney's this multimillionaire. He's still getting money from Halliburton yearly. And he's going to charge you and I to go on this hunting trip with a justice of the Supreme Court who's going to sit on in judgment of a case that involves Cheney. Now, again, conservatives, none of them have called in to answer this. And the other one that I pose, is this a lie? Is this not happened? This was all fabrication? Well, no, it's pretty well documented. Or is it okay? Or do you want to call up and say Vice President Dick Cheney is corrupt? Antonin Scalia is corrupt. Now, New York University law professor Stephen Geller says, in my view, this further ratchets it up. If the vice president is the source of generosity, it means Scalia is accepting a gift of some value from a litigant in a case before him. Now, Antonin Scalia didn't pay a dime for this. You and I did. We paid for the duck hunting trip and the security and the aides and all of that. And the recipient of this was Antonin Scalia. So he accepted a gift, and this is from a litigant with a case in front of him. This is pure 100% corruption. This should be an impeachable defense, offense. And he said, and the law professor says, it's not just a trip with a litigant. It's a trip at the expense of the litigant. This is an easy case for stepping aside. Well, I think it's more than that. And this is 2 years ago, the Sierra Club and Judicial Watch, which is right-wing, sued Cheney, seeking to learn whether the vice president and his staff had met behind closed doors with lobbyists and corporate officials from the oil, gas, coal, and electric power industries. Well, everybody knows they did. And that they wrote the energy policy. Ken Lay, moved Cheney's hand across the paper. We are going, back to line two. Thank you. It's Peter Werby. Hi, you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter. This is John from South Rockland. How you doing?
Hi, John.
I'll make this quick. I just, I'm calling in. Guys I work with, they're Republicans, some of them, and they're like so rabid, regardless of whether it's right or wrong, I'm not really either one. I think, if something's good, it's good, but you can't even talk to the guys. It just drives you nuts.
What are they rabid about? Like, what issues?
They're just so pro-Republican, and it doesn't matter what Bush does. They're going to find no fault with them.
Are these wealthy guys?
No, I'm a police officer. We're not, they don't make that great of money or nothing, but, it just drives you nuts,
Well,
I can't even talk about them.
Bush is cutting money for first responders. Don't they realize that? I mean, people tend to associate, for better or for worse. I mean, I know police officers, all of them are liberals. All I know are liberals. But anyways, police tend to be conservative and identify often the Republicans with that ideology. But, man, they're not even working in, the interests of, of police. Or fire people, or EMS, or anything like that.
Yeah, it's just, you can't even strike up a conversation. They're just, just so, it's drives you nuts.
Hey, I come down to South Rockwood about 3, 4, 5 times a year to Erie Metro Park.
Yeah, right there. It's nice and quiet down there, and I like it. It's close to Expressway, but, it's pretty quiet, but
well, I come from the Royal Oak area, so I mean, I come quite a ways, and then one of the big features of South Rockwood on Jefferson there is the A&W drive-in, an old-fashioned drive-in.
I still go there, but I'm not sure, why do they still have a Republican Democrat? Why can't you just scrap it all, and why do you have to be one or the other? You know what I mean? I'm not really sure.
Let me see. Somebody wrote, let me see if I can find this real quickly. Warren writes in. He says, he agrees with this guy, Joe. It's like Russia, one-party state, thanks to the media. I would never trust either of them.
Yeah, I wish you'd just scrap the whole thing and, you know, just choose whatever whatever your views are. Why does it have to be one side or the other, you know what I mean?
Gotcha. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Peter.
Appreciate it, John. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Joe writes into Call Talk, yes, at yahoo.com. He says, I despise Bushwhacker as you do. Hey, he is also getting help with ruining our Medicare with the help of the American Association of Retired Persons, AARP, and their cronies. They're supposed to help the ones that put money in it, and they sell us out. Friggin' sellouts, he says. Yeah. Let's see. Our next caller is right here. Hi, WRIS. Let me get the call letters right. I think I can remember them. WRIF. Welcome.
Hi, Peter. It's Ed from Novi here.
Hi, Ed.
Two quick things I wanted to comment on and get your opinion. First was with the Tom Russ interview. The one thing I really had a bone with, and it, some people might see it as a small issue, he seemed very arrogant when he made the statement that he's not worried that he's about this election. Like, he's got this in the bag is pretty much what I got from him.
You know, the election.
I got that vibe. Like, I'm not worried about any of these Democrats. I already feel that I got the election in the bag. It's like, come on now, you know.
Well, let me ask you this, Ed.
Sure.
If you were like an elected official and the election before you had lost, but in fact were granted the post, wouldn't you be pretty confident that the same thing would happen?
Well, you have a very valid point there. You know?
I mean, it's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Wait, I'm looking for his statement. I'm not going to lose. I don't plan on losing. Well, I mean, anybody's got. What's he going to say? I plan on losing.
Well, not planning on losing, but he's confident that he can win the election or something.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, he just had that arrogance about him, like he's already got this in the bag, and he's discounting John Kerry, who's pretty much dead even with him in the polls right now.
Well, actually, Kerry is pulled considerably ahead. But you got to remember that Bush has not begun to spend all that $120 million or so that he's raised from all his corporate pals that think, you know, he's going to continue to give the store away to them, our store. And also that he hasn't campaigned. I mean, I wonder. A debate is going to be pretty interesting. I mean, Kerry is extraordinarily eloquent. Bush, can't walk and chew gum without a teleprompter.
Oh, the other thing I just want to get your opinion on real quick is Bush and the Republicans, they all seem to, when they bring up the economy issue,
yeah,
they all like to toot their horn about the Dow Jones and about the GDP going up. Well, I just picked up Sunday's Detroit News and Free Press, and right on the front page, they're laying off people from Myers, for God's sake.
Yeah, well,
you know, and it's just sad that, you know, there's more to the economy, to me, than the Dow Jones going up and the GDP. I'm looking at real people with jobs that are losing these jobs, you know, and you keep reading about this in the Free Press and News.
Well,
and Republicans don't buy into all this. That's what they like to toot their horn about, you know. So I don't see the economy is as great as Republicans want to say.
Well, it isn't. I mean, it depends. The economy is doing well. The Dow Jones is over 10,000 again. But I'm just looking at this. Job growth in January disappoints. So the U.S. economy just only created 112,000 new jobs in January. It needs 200,000 and needs even more than that to keep anywhere near what Bush has predicted. The overall loss of 2.5 million jobs since Bush took office is not being eroded. And in December, what was it, 16,000 new jobs in December for the entire country?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
those 2 points I just wanted to bring up, and
well,
I enjoy your show.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. And here's what's in store. Used to, the prevailing, I don't know what you'd call it, story, actually it's sort of a myth, was that, everybody in Mexico is getting paid poor wages, but eventually there'll be the rise in wages because they're at where we were, say, in the 1930s or something like that. Yeah, that's sort of that story. I mean, the justified people paying people starvation wages, you know, that were taken, you know, for jobs that were taken away from people here that were making good wages. Now, I just got this release from the National Federation of Independent Business, And they say living, listen to this language, living wage has outlived its purpose. Now, the living wage is what's been passed by any number of municipalities around the country and here in Michigan, Detroit, Southfield, Lansing, places like that, that they say you can't pay this paltry minimum wage, the disgrace of the industrial world that's, you know, or the minimum here in the United States. That if you're going to do business with the city of Detroit or Southfield or Lansing or lots of other places in the state, you're going to have to pay workers, if they have city contracts, a living wage, something you can live on. Now, so Lansing has minimum wage for a living wage rather for $11.50. Charles Owens, who's the NFIB, Michigan State Director, says our current economy demands that businesses do more with less. That's what he wants from us workers. Our economy demands that businesses do more with less. It means work harder, get paid less. That's the model of which the Bushites of the world have. And the model of Mexico, of Indonesia, China, Vietnam, it's not them looking at us, thinking one day they're going to be making some good union wage at an industrial job, making $16, $18 an hour with full benefits. It has the employers, the capitalists, the big corporations of this country looking at Mexico and Indonesia and Vietnam and China and thinking, one day I'm going to be paying my workers here in the United States those wages. That's how bad it is. All right, that's enough of that. We just got a little time left before our interview, so let's roll on. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. How you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
All right, this is TJ from Warren.
Hi.
And, I just want to personally thank Michael Moore for single-handedly causing the mainstream media to start talking about George Bush's AWOL.
Isn't that great?
I know. Now they are forced to talk about it.
You know, TJ, one of the things that happened, though, initially, all they did was began talking about how rude Michael was.
Yeah.
Yeah. But well, now you have a man that might be the next president of the United States, John Kerry, talking about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? It just boils down to this, and it doesn't even matter if someone's a conservative or liberal. Anybody who went to high school and probably college knows that sometimes they came across where they had to write a research paper. And everybody knows that when you write a research paper, you have to have a works cited page which tells the, you know, pretty much where you got your information from and you compiled your research. And you pretty much won't get a grade unless you have that page on there telling your instructor where you got your research from.
Right.
Well, Michael Moore did that. It's on his website. It's on the back of the last two books he published. But when you watch ABC News or whatever, they just kind of tell you that, no, he's wrong, you know, George Bush made up the time later on, whatever, but they don't back it up, you know. As far as I'm concerned, if Michael Moore is wrong, prove him wrong.
Yeah.
Where is the information that can prove him wrong? And that's the funniest thing. If they feel that Michael Moore is so wrong in his information, and if they had one little shred of evidence to prove him wrong, don't you think they would jump upon that at the moment they could?
Sure. Well, the other thing, TJ, is that AWOLBush.com, the website, offers a reward to anybody that can demonstrate that, in fact, George W. Bush carried out his National Guard service in Alabama during 1972. So if any of these Republicans can prove that, they can go get, I forget what it is, like $20,000 or something.
Has anybody come to claim that reward yet?
Absolutely not.
Exactly.
Thank you, TJ.
All right, I love your show, Pete.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for calling in. Shane in Redford writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He says, from a 17-year-old's point of view of this fictitious war, it seems that if this puppet is reelected, we're heading towards the end of democracy in our country. I might be biased because I'm not rich, but it just seems so obvious that I can't understand why anyone would support this. That's what Rick Fox and I were just talking about, right? It's a no-brainer. If satellites found mobile weapons of mass destruction laboratories, why did they ever take their eyes off of them? Why is our vice president's former company being allowed to monopolize Iraq's wealth? I mean, would advancing our country's automobile industry to use alternative sources of energy be all that bad? Or would it be that the fat white guys wouldn't get their new gas-hogging Lexus and Bentleys? Sincerely pissed off. Yeah. Thank you, Shane. I think we got time for one more call, but hold on if you're on the air still. Or on hold. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air.
How you doing, Peter?
Doing well.
Hey, man, I just want to say, how come you don't go on some of these, or at least try to go on some of these conservative talk shows and prove some of these points? Man, you'll never hear them talk about the Townsend thing or Scalia or anything like that.
Well, I don't know. They never invited me. I mean, every once in a while, they used to invite me on CNN and MSNBC and all that. I don't know why they stopped. Maybe they didn't like me.
Not good, man, you know. You should get on there and, like, you know, let them know what's up, you know. I mean...
Well, yeah. I mean...
All they do is blame, like, these problems on secularism and what have you, you know?
Sure. Secularism's good. We don't want to... That's the United States, a secular country.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, hey, I'm ready for them if they're ready for me.
Right on. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Rick, we... another caller. All right. Thank you. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Yeah, this is William Atkins from Dearborn Heights.
Hi.
And hi. I love your show. I listen to it all the time. And just how they got a... Bush is the puppet of the year. I mean, they just... He just so controlled and all about... All about oil and wealth, and that's why they stole the election. They couldn't have no environmentalists in there making, you know, taking away from their oil-burning cars. You know, it's just, it's all about them, you know. It's all about how fat their pockets can get.
Yep. Yep, that's it. And unfortunately, there's a chance that those people could be reelected, but only if they manufacture another crisis. And I don't know if the American people are going to buy it. Even if there's they'd let another terror attack occur, even if they capture Osama bin Laden, even if, what else can, even if they, you know, invade North Korea. Because I think almost for certain that anything now will be seen by great numbers of American people as just political manipulation. All right, I'm out of time, so thank you very much for being our last caller. I appreciate it. I actually got time for one more email. Let's see. It says, Peter, now that Bush has admitted that he was wrong about Saddam's weapons, do you think the Republicans who run Congress will apologize to France for the Freedom Fries and everybody else they alienated in their mad rush to war? The ones on the left were right about this war. Unfortunately, we are equally screwed. Keep up the good work. You could make it in any market, even here in Orange County, California. Right, Doug. Behind the orange curtain. Let me see if I have any fine. Oh, man, there may be... let's see. Because someone wrote in and said they didn't. The only thing they didn't like about the song on my website, peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E, is the song I Hate Republicans, that it compared Bush to Hitler. And Brat Pat writes in, the video on the song shows Hitler and the KKK because they are conservatives. They could have also shown any militia member, including Timothy McVeigh, because they also were conservatives. After all, what are Republicans if not conservatives? Well, think good thoughts. Join me again next week for phone-in talk. But stay tuned for some interviews I think you'll find very interesting.
Hello?
Hey, Bob, what are you doing, man?
No, I'm just leaving work. Why, what's up?
You should shoot across the border and meet me at Leopard's Lounge in Windsor. Dude, they have incredible girls from all over the world, and I'm telling you, these girls are hot.
Oh, man, I gotta go across the border. I don't know.
Come on, you big baby. It's just 5 minutes from the Bridger Tunnel at 1190 Wyandotte West. And get this, at Leopard's Lounge, you don't even have to pay a cover charge, ever. Plus, they even have free parking. You gotta meet me there. They have these two girls from Romania. Bro, I'm telling you, they're the friendliest girls I've ever met. Heck, all the girls at Leopard's Lounge are friendly.
Wait a minute, did you say no cover, free parking, and women from all over the world?
Bro, that's what I've been telling you. So, are you gonna meet me up at Leopard's Lounge or what?
Dude, I'm so there. I'll see you in about half an hour. And hey, if you get there before me, tell the girls I'm on my way.
You got it. I'll see you at Leopard's Lounge.
Leopard's Lounge in Royal, Windsor's number one gentleman's club. Just 5 minutes from the bridge or tunnel at 1190 Wyandotte West. Call 1-888-653-8881 for Leopard's Lounge in Royal.
Did you know the 2004 earned income tax credit could be worth up to $4,204 to eligible taxpayers? Contact a tax professional for details.
Men, how do you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtral, the new climax control system for men. Maxtral lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtral is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of stamina you want and a woman never forgets. Maxtral is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make the pleasure go on and on with Maxtral, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtral or call now and try Maxtral risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708. Prolong the pleasure, maximize the control, and see how much longer you last with Maxtral. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708.
Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby, on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Good morning. Thank you very much for joining me. We don't have regulars on this broadcast, but if there's one person who has come close, he's my guest again in the studios here. He is Rudy Simons. He's a Detroit area businessman. He's also a board member of the Michigan Coalition on Human Rights, and he just returned, now a few weeks, in December of 2003, from a fact-finding mission to Columbia. Accompanying him, or he was accompanying, Bishop Thomas J. Gumbleton, the auxiliary bishop of Detroit, and a third person, and they went to Colombia, where there's a war going on, mostly what they call a forgotten war. There's a drug war, there's a guerrilla war. Every once in a while it pops up. Rudy Simons, Bishop Gumbleton, and their other traveling companion are going to be making a public appearance as well. We'll give you the details on that in a little while. Rudy Simons, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you, Peter. Always a pleasure to be here with you. You talk about some of the issues that need to be talked about and, unfortunately, for the most part, get neglected.
And frequently, you've made trips there. You, the last time we talked, I believe you had just returned from Iraq.
That's true. And I've made a couple of trips to Iraq, but this was a little bit different. It was not only geographically different, it was politically different.
Now, do you find, well, that in a sense answers my question. I was going to say, both of these areas with, much, much different definitions on every level, are there similarities?
Only the fact that the people in Iraq and the people in Colombia are suffering from the grossest kind of abuses engaged in by their governments and the allies of their governments, and unfortunately, I have to say this, by the policies of the United States government. We can talk about that a little bit if you'd like.
I have to say that in many ways I admire, and I guess, whatever you compliment somebody on their courage or their bravery, they always deny that it is such. But if you said, "Hey, Pete, we've got a ticket for you to come with us to Colombia," I think I would decline, given the turmoil in that country, the violence, as we said, the drug wars, the guerrilla wars, the poverty, kidnappings, everything that goes on there. And you said that this was not, I think maybe you told me before the broadcast, this was not an official trip, as it wasn't sponsored by a group. It was you and Bishop Gumbleton and a third person, a photographer,
yes,
was it?
Linda Panetta, a courageous and extremely capable woman, a photojournalist from Philadelphia, who had accompanied Bishop Gumbleton on a trip to Afghanistan about 2 years ago. And a year ago, January, she and Bishop Gumbleton and I and others were together in Iraq. So she's been around and she does a great job.
Now, we both, I assume, put our pants on similarly this morning, and yet I say no way in the world you could get me to go to Colombia. You, Rudy Simons, tell me the genesis of the trip, and did you have any, you have a family, you have a fairly young child?
I do, yes, and first of all, let me say that I have known you through the years and know your personal courage, and I think if I had a chance to talk to you for 15 minutes, you would have gone with us.
But
be that as it may, I think we were not in any special danger. It is a dangerous country in many ways, But the time that we spent there, which was only 8 days, we had an opportunity to go up into the department or state called Choco. And the thing which makes that particular area of Colombia unique is the fact that the overwhelming proportion of its population are Afro-Colombians. And with all the suffering in that country, there's probably no population within it which suffers to a greater degree than do the Afro-Colombians.
Now, I had actually met someone, a year and a half ago or so. He spoke.
Yes.
Were you at that meeting?
Yes, indeed. We brought him in through the Michigan Coalition for Human Rights. His name was Luis Gilberto Murillo. And he had been elected the governor of the state of Choco. He was an Afro-Colombian. He was the first Afro-Colombian ever elected to a governorship in Colombia in all of its history. And he was also the youngest man ever elected a governor. And what happened to him is parallel in many ways to what is happening to others in that particular area. He was kidnapped. His family was threatened. And finally, he found the danger too great, and he took his family, and he fled the country and is now living in Washington, as a matter of fact, working on similar issues.
That would be like Jennifer Granholm having
to
leave Michigan under those circumstances.
That's exactly right. And she, of course, was the first woman governor of Michigan, but he was the first on two counts, and was especially important because of both of those counts. But alas, he was forced out, and a lot of that sort of thing is going on in Colombia. As a result of actions mostly, but not exclusively, by the government and by the paramilitaries, who, in spite of the denials of the government, are clearly very closely allied with the government in their activities, and the work of the two main guerrilla armies, the FARC and the ELN, about which we occasionally read.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was behind the idea for you and Bishop Gumbleton and the other person to make this trip?
Well, let me explain that we had visited two villages which had been very severely afflicted by the actions of the army and the paramilitaries in particular. And there had been a call placed to Bishop Gumbleton saying, please come down. These people need support from internationals and especially from North Americans. The call came from an organization based in Bogota, the capital, called in Spanish Justice and Peace. It's a Catholic organization, and they had been working with these people for some time to try to afford some kind of protection and to be to provide intercession in some respects with the Colombian government. And they said, can you please come down? Now, he had been in Colombia three times already, and Linda Panetta had been there once. I had never been in Colombia, but the bishop was kind enough to invite me to go with him. We have traveled together, as I mentioned, on a few earlier occasions. And I was delighted to have a chance to see what was going on, to educate myself. And as is our duty when we have that kind of an opportunity, to come back and to speak to my fellow citizens and what I saw and believe I learned, and to kind of raise the awareness of what's happening there.
My guest is Rudy Simons, and he and Bishop Gumbleton are going to appear this coming Thursday, February 12th at 7 p.m., and it's called, the meeting is Columbia, Report from the Frontline of a Forgotten War, and it's going to be at St. James Catholic Church, Woodward and 8.5 Mile Road in Ferndale, and I'll have that up on my website. You can check that more for information at peterwerby.com. I guess, you know, the impressions of Columbia that one has, either from films or from the media, I can't remember this one of these action guys, that, you know, as soon as you land in the main city, you're almost under attack. But you said that you didn't feel at any time that you were at any risk. What is it like? I mean, are we talking about modern cities, mud huts? I mean, what's it all look like?
Let me tell you about it. First of all, I would say that properly, the American people have their eyes focused on Iraq and on Afghanistan and on the upcoming elections, and all of those things are of extreme importance. But along the way, one of the casualties has been any interest in what's going on in Colombia, and the United States is a very big player in what is happening there. You may recall that during the term of President Clinton, his second term, he, working with the Congress, passed something called Plan Colombia, which provided initially $1.3 billion to the Colombian government. It was a gift to the government by ours, and it was a gift to our arms makers because almost all of that money goes to buy U.S. manufactured armaments, which are then sent to Colombia. Now, the struggle in Colombia has been going on now for 40 years, and essentially, as in other places in Latin America and around the world, it is a case of the people who have nothing, who are dealt out of all their country has to offer, against the forces of the government and the people it protects, who, as usual, own and control almost everything in the country. So it's an honest revolution. It has some rather nasty elements to it coming from both sides, but overwhelmingly the pressures are on the ordinary citizen in Colombia, farmers, agrarian, and the people we visited lived in two small villages which they named Nueva Vida, New Life, and Esperanza en Dios, Hope in God. As you probably can tell from the way I say that, I do not speak Spanish, and shame on me. But nonetheless, the people in these two villages, numbering in total about 1,500, had returned to the land that they had lived on for centuries, having been forced into internal exile for over 3 years. In February of 1997, planes from the Colombian Air Force, and those are not paramilitaries, those are the Colombian government, working in tandem with paramilitaries, attacked 23 small villages up in the Choco jungle, which lies just not many miles below the border with Panama, which is to its northwest. They were driven off of their land. They were force-marched, and it's not easy to move in those jungles, I will tell you, but they were force-marched to a little seaside town called Turbo, which sits on the Caribbean, and there they were herded into a gymnasium and told that they were going to have to stay there. They could not go back to their land. They organized themselves after some period of time and formed a set of principles by which they decided to live, which included nonviolence and morality and other good things by which any organized community might well choose to live. And eventually, after years of struggle and after suffering, I think the number was 87 deaths, there were over 3,000 people who lived in these 23 villages. After those deaths and disappearances and many more deaths once they arrived in Turbo because of the poor services that they had while they were there, they were granted two pieces of land back in the general area from which they had come. They called themselves citizens of the Cacarica region. Cacarica is one of a web of rivers that run up through those jungles. And they settled on this piece of land, which is only 24 hectares, about 60 acres, as we would call it. And the villages were located a few miles apart. And they put barbed wire around their villages and called themselves Zona Humanitarias, meaning this is a peaceful village. And if you are carrying a gun, you are not welcome here, and we don't want you to come in.
And they're not armed either?
They are not armed. There is not a gun in the place.
In this, in a country bristling with armaments almost to the extent that it makes the United States look unarmed.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The paramilitaries in their present form were largely put together by the large landowners down there to hold off the guerrilla armies, and they have become a major factor in the deaths and destruction that's going on throughout Colombia.
Now, and you mentioned that these are the same people that are primarily of African ancestry?
Almost everyone.
And are they the ancestors of former slaves?
Indeed they are, and that kind of history plays out in many countries in Latin America, Central America, as you know.
And give us kind of the human experience and interaction that you had. These are Spanish-speaking people?
Spanish-speaking people. We were accompanied there by a wonderful young woman, a nun, named Carolina Pardo, who works for the Justice and Peace Group in Bogota, and who accompanied us from our landing point in Medellin northward, first by plane, then by car, then by a motorized launch, and then by a series of dugout log canoes.
Really?
Until we finally got to the place where we intended to go. For a couple of older folks, like the bishop and myself, well, I'll speak only for myself, it was an interesting challenge because I, at least, am a very spoiled fellow living in our society, and we stayed with these villages which had no running water and no electricity and mud to such an extent that from time to time we would sink down knee-high in mud trying to cross a stream. It was challenging, but very much worthwhile.
And I assume your reception was a good one.
Extremely warm. Let me tell you that there was great appreciation for the kind of support that we as North Americanos could bring by our presence. But we were not the only internationals there. They get support, limited as it may be, from a group called Peace Brigades International, which has four units in Colombia, one of which is based in this little town of Turbo. They get support from a group called, not Doctors Without Borders, Doctors of the World,
mm-hmm.
Internationals, and they get support from the United Nations Refugee Unit. So they are not without some outside help and awareness, but by and large, they're on their own and grateful for any kind of help that they get. They live in circumstances which are probably very much like what they have been for hundreds of years. They don't miss the absence of the water and electricity. They're quite used to that. But it certainly is an eye-opener for those of us who live so comfortably here.
What's the culture like? Is it an amalgam of African roots and Latin American and Indian?
Yes. I mean, these people have been there for hundreds of years, that is, the Afro-Colombians. But they live very close to the land, and such land as they have is turned over overwhelmingly to the raising of different crops, maize and yucca and coconuts and other things. There were many animals running around, horses and mules and pigs and all having the free run of the land. They did get help in this one village from the United Nations refugee group. They got equipment with which they could process rice, which they grow, and that provided them with some income, and we were able to see part of that process as well.
What's their spirit like in that section of Colombia? I mean, are they an at-risk population from the government and from the paramilitaries? Is it a joyous community or one struck with fear and deprivation?
It's a combination of both. We saw a great deal of joy and determination of these people to make their lives something that they wanted to live and to live without any attendance by those who are fighting the war. They were very warm in their reception of us, but they're also very well organized. They've chosen their leadership, and their leadership deals with such authorities as has any interest in them. Peter, the thing is that the Colombian government wants these people and all of the people in that area off that land. Why? There are a number of reasons. One, they want to build another cross-isthmus canal, wider than the Panama Canal, so that the oil shippers can build tankers that are much bigger than those that are presently being able to ship through the Panama Canal. That's one of the reasons.
Well, actually, that was going to be one of my questions. Why is Columbia bleeding so badly? I mean, we kind of almost, I have to speak for myself and, you know, superficially say drugs, guerrilla warfare, some of the other issues, and poverty. I mean, we know that that has varying degrees of response throughout Latin America. Let's say this, though, before we go any farther, because people come and go on shows like this. Sometimes people are in their cars listening to the program. My guest is Michigan Coalition Human Rights Board member Rudy Simons. He and Bishop Thomas J. Gumbleton of Detroit and Linda Panetta were recently in Columbia. And they're going to be appearing, Bishop Gumbleton and Rudy Simons, at a forum called Columbia Report from the Front Line of a Forgotten War. It's this coming Thursday, February 12th. And it will be at St. James Catholic Church, Woodward, at 8.5 Mile Road in Ferndale.
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock, yeah. Absolutely. Got to get people there at the right time. So the grand issues, I mean, why have the issues exploded in Colombia to the extent that they have? I mean, there are certainly these class issues, as we see in Venezuela and Ecuador and other places. But this, of course, is just a situation of terrible proportions.
Yes. There were more reasons why they want them off the land, and I can get into that later if we have time. But the Plan Colombia that came down under Bill Clinton's administration has now been expanded beyond the borders of Colombia under a program called the Andean something or other, because the effort to destroy the coca plants as part of our war on drugs has been a total failure. Each year, with more and more spraying, with chemicals, by the way, which are illegal in this country, made by Monsanto, has destroyed some of the crops, but the total export of drugs from Colombia has increased each year and has now crossed the border into both Ecuador and Peru, hence the new name of the Andean program. And under the present administration, it has expanded itself from being, quote, a war on drugs to a war on narco-terrorists, which translated means a war against the guerrilla armies, which have struggled for 4 decades now to try to bring some sort of a just arrangement within Colombia.
I should mention as well that that at this meeting where Rudy Simons is going to be talking, there's also a film being shown called Plan Colombia, Cashing In on the Drug War Failure. And in your trip to Colombia, was that anything that you could demonstrably see? I mean, what does this mean, cashing in on the failure of the drug war? And it has failed, except that it keeps rolling along, spending billions of our tax dollar money.
Billions it is, and the coca growing still goes on. We did not see coca plants with our own eyes, but we did hear from a variety of sources, including internationals and the people in these villages, that coca is being grown widely in certain areas south of Panama, where it is very easily and frequently transshipped northward into Panama and out to the Caribbean. So that is going on all the time.
Now, well, let's talk. In fact, I do see by our clock on the wall that, in fact, we only have a couple of minutes. The issues usually are, you know, power, land, wealth, and in this case, which I didn't realize until I was reading some of your source material, oil as well.
Yes, there's a great deal of oil in Colombia. It's not a major producer, as Venezuela is, but under the very land where these people live is not only oil, but there's uranium and gold, and in the area there's some of the most valuable timbers in the world, which are being taken by companies that are being resisted by the people who live on the land and do not want to see those trees cut down.
And does it have an end, a solution? I mean, we're so heartsick at what's happening in the Middle East, and particularly trying to solve a problem between two peoples, the Palestinians and the Israelis. Here, at least, the same people. Yet, it doesn't seems as intractable as that struggle.
It does seem to be intractable, and one of the reasons is that our present administration is most eager to see the defeat of the guerrillas and business as usual down there. And it's really a sad story. Many deaths, over somewhere between 2 and 3 million Colombians are internally displaced, the highest number in the world, and 3/4 of the deaths of labor leaders around the world take place in Colombia. So that's an ongoing struggle. And until such time as the government and the guerrillas can sit down together, as they did a couple of years ago, though they did not come to a peace arrangement, until such time as that happens and some kind of an equitable arrangement can be made, it's going to continue, and the U.S. government is playing a huge role in it.
Well, I want to thank you so much, as usual, Rudy Simons, for being with us. I'll tell you one more time about, because we've just scratched the surface, haven't we, Rudy?
Just that.
Yeah. There'll be a public meeting this coming Thursday, and the date is February 12th, 7 p.m. at St. James Catholic Church, Woodward 8.5 Mile Road in Ferndale. Information 313-874-2624. You go to my website, peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E.com. Go to the Detroit calendar section, and that will tell you. Rudy Simon, thank you so much for being with me.
Thank you for having me, Peter.
You're logged on at WRIF.com. We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRAF, and the best radio website in the world, WRAF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRAF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRAF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like La Bisteca, located in Plymouth, proudly featuring certified Piedmontese beef. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com.
Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Dr. Roach, put your best pace and body forward with help from Dr. Roach.
Log on today and save.
With the home of rock and roll
at WRIF. .com.
Now is the Riff's Rippin' Rock at 9 o'clock. 1 solid hour of your Riff Rock and Roll request.
All the excitement and fun you can bear.
With Meltdown, the big unit on the Riff.
Your opportunity to take control of the WRIF playlist
with the guy who lost control a long time ago.
Call in your Riff Rock and Roll requests to Meltdown at 313-298-WRIF or email them to meltdown@wrif.com. The Rippin' Rock at 9 o'clock.
We're with Meltdown.
Easy. 101.
W-R-I-F.
We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment. This is 101 WRIF, broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. Thanks for listening.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like La Scala, located in the heart of Windsor's famous Little Italy district, you can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com.
Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's 5 best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save.
With the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We got some great celebrity phone numbers. We had to try them. First, we called the 49ers' Terrell Owens, and then Brian Urlacher's girlfriend, Paris Hilton.
You have reached the Sprint voice mailbox of...
8-1.
To leave a voice message, press 1.
Terrell, this is Jeff Garcia. I just want to say I'm not supposed to have a little cry with you the other day. It was really nice seeing you cried, too, because I knew you cared. I love you. Bye, T.O. Giving him rides.
Hey, it's Paris. My screen is broken on my phone, so therefore I cannot read any of the numbers on it. So make sure to leave a number at the message, and I will get back to you as soon as I can. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, Paris. It's 54 here. Big Brian. Just thinking about putting it in your butt. Boom. Always say PH. How about a big 5-4? Up the old Yeah, I was thinking to run a post pattern right up the middle. When I see a hole, you know me, I got to plug it up. Didn't mean to total a damn thing.
Good thing you love it.
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike. In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's good.
101.1
WRIF. Ow, you're shouting at me.
Been about over the years, whether you're joining me for the first time or have been a listener for a long time, is how do decisions get made in this country or in our community, for that matter, and you know, our cities, our states, and in the world? Who makes the overarching decisions? I mean, we can decide, oh, we're going to move from Detroit to California or Texas or something like that, or we can decide we're going to try to change jobs, but there's an overarching context that controls in many ways, or maybe even in grand ways, the choices that we actually have. We may be less aware of that because of the nature of the political and social and economic system we live in the United States. In the third world, for instance, it's much more pronounced. The capacity to make decisions and choices are extraordinarily limited. In all cases, those decisions are made by elite forces, elite economic forces particularly, and the political forces that act on their behalf. And you may have gone to my website at peterwerby.com and seen the phrase, "Another world is possible." Well, I don't know if these folks stole that from there or not. Actually, they didn't, because I stole that. That phrase is a clarion call, maybe, or a vision that we don't have to be satisfied with things as they are. Joining me is Thomas Ponaia, and Thomas Ponaia, along with William F. Fisher, have edited a book called Another World is Possible, Popular Alternatives to Globalization at the World Social Forum. Now, there's something called the World Economic Forum. That's where the big guys meet, the elite. That's, you know, the men wearing the $3,000-$4,000 suits and the $20,000 Rolex watches, and they make decisions that means a forest can disappear, or a lake will be polluted, or a part of the Amazon will be uninhabitable for a while. But there is an alternative. If not yet another world being possible, an alternative view is possible, and that takes the form of the World Social Forum. It meets regularly in Porto Alegre in Brazil. This time, this year, it met in India. Joining me, as I think I said, Thomas Ponaia, and he's both the co-editor of Another World is Possible, and just returned from the World Social Forum in India. Thomas Ponaia, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you.
I promise I let guests talk.
I was just wondering, with that great introduction, I mean, you should be the one being interviewed.
Well, go ahead. Actually, I was surprised to learn that you were born in India.
That's right. And I was born in India. I lived there until I was 1 year old.
Oh,
I left.
So you know the language, or you don't, or
no,
one of the many languages?
I know. No, I don't. I can speak a couple languages, but not any of the Indian languages.
Hmm. Tell us about this year's World Social Forum. I saw that it was in fact, I don't have it in front of me, that it was in, how is that said, Mumbai?
Mumbai, India.
Mumbai, India, and I'm thinking, what strange place is that? Where is it located? But it's actually, we call it a little differently here, don't we?
Well, it used to be called Bombay.
Yeah.
The name changed a few years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, is Bombay an English name?
I guess it could be interpreted that way. There's been a move in India towards bringing back, I guess we could call them indigenous names. So Madras is no longer called Madras. That's a different name. And you know, throughout the country, they've been doing this. So it's part of a kind of rise in kind of cultural nationalism or ethnic nationalism in different parts of the country.
What's the matter with those people? They don't want their cities called by English names?
Hey, not everyone wants English, and not everyone wants McDonald's.
Well, I am shocked. Tell us about the people at the World Social Forum that bring some of these questions and greater ones beyond that to the fore. Maybe tell us from its origins about the World Social Forum and how it figures in the accounts in your book, Another World is Possible.
Back in 2000, a group of activists, mainly from Brazil, got together and said, look, we've got a lot of resistance to globalization. There's a lot of movements against globalization. But we can't be a movement simply about naysaying, about resistance. We've got to be a movement about alternatives, about vision, about the future. And so we need to get together, create some sort of open space where movements from all over the world, activists, individuals, intellectuals, etc., citizens can get together and propose and network and educate each other about what they're doing. And so they came up with this idea of a world social forum. So back, the first forum was held in Brazil, and as you said, in Porto Alegre, and the forum had about 10,000 activists from all over the world. Now the second one had about 50,000 activists. The third one had 100,000 activists. And this fourth one that moved from Brazil to India had 120,000 activists. So you can see that there's a lot of interest in the idea of proposing alternatives, and that maybe this world isn't the only world, and maybe we can produce a better world, something that's more more just, more democratic, more sustainable, more culturally diverse.
Now, that's certainly important. I was thinking about that. I'm throughout my political life, I'm always in the anti-war movement or the anti-globalization, the anti-poverty, and certainly we have to negate some of the worst features of this world system, but the idea of putting forth a vision is extraordinarily important. How does that operate within the World Social Forum, that these visions of living differently come about?
Well, what happened, there was something like 1,000 workshops at this last forum, and you have groups coming and presenting the kinds of things that they're the different kinds of programs they're doing. And you start hearing, like, really interesting projects, which, of course, the mainstream media doesn't cover. You start hearing about these innovative, experimental projects, which are lifting people out of poverty and creating better cities, better societies. And so it's a bit like a kind of a marketplace of utopias when you go into the forum. You walk around and you get a chance to listen to fantastic speakers, give you different visions from what you would see in your daily tabloid or CNN or whatever.
Well, when you said utopian visions, I mean, utopian generally means unrealizable. I mean, that's not exactly what it means, but people think that. Most of us consider ourselves realists, so we want to say, you know, well, maybe we can get a dollar an hour more for our wages, or maybe we can fix the potholes. The idea of transforming this world from its basic definition seems pretty tough.
Well, you're right. I should have been more clear. It's real utopias. That's what the concrete utopias. And let me give you an example of a real utopia. The city of Porto Alegre itself. Now, this is a city of about 1 million people. It's in the south of Brazil. About 15 years ago, they decided to, progressives were elected into power, and they decided to start a participatory budget process, meaning they would have a city budget that would be open to consultation from everyone in the city. Anyone who wanted to help construct the city's budget could take part in helping construct the budget. And so what they do is a 10-month budget process in which they go around the city consulting. And they get about 50,000 people a year helping produce the city's budget. And what they've seen over the last 15 years is a reduction in poverty. They've created a city with fantastic infrastructure, great roads. I mean, I've been in this city. Fantastic bus service and a really high quality of life. And to top it all off, by the way, corporations and the corporate kind of controlled media, of course, have criticized the participatory budget. But in the last 15 years, they've tripled capital investment in this city. And so this city is a great example of what kinds of things can be done when you bring together human ingenuity and participation. And, of course, it's the kind of thing that doesn't get publicized in the mainstream. And so these are the kinds of things you hear about when you're at the World Social Forum.
Now, how does Porto Alegre able to do this when a city like Detroit and even Boston, where you're located? In fact, I actually don't even think I properly introduced you. And let me just take the time to do that again. My guest is Thomas Ponaia, and he's a PhD candidate at the Graduate School of Geography at Clark University in Worcester, Massachusetts. I shouldn't say it like if I was in Massachusetts, I could just say Mass, right? And his dissertation is focusing on this World Social Forum and the alternatives to contemporary globalization. globalization. The book is Another World is Possible, popular alternatives to globalization at the World Social Forum, and it's published by Zed Book, Z-E-D. So how is, Detroit can't do it at all. It's just driving in Detroit, and there was, the snow wasn't plowed off the, side streets, and, the potholes everywhere. It's still high crime, low, very, very high infant mortality rate, and on and on. So how can a city in Brazil, which we think of as having, we would think probably, if you ask most Americans, has a lower standard of living than the United States, how can it bring that about and we can't?
Well, first of all, Detroit could. I think Detroit could. Porto Alegre is an exception in Brazil. Brazil is a poor country. There's about 50% poverty, a 50% poverty rate in Brazil. This city, Porto Alegre, has a poverty rate that's basically comparable to the overall U.S. poverty rate, so that's pretty outstanding that they've been able to do that. They've been able to do it because, they've lobbied for the idea, and they don't. One thing I think that they don't have is we've been a bit brainwashed in one way, in the sense that we think that if a CEO or a banker or a politician or some expert says we should follow a certain path, well, therefore we should follow that path. And in fact, what they're saying is no. Every citizen has a unique experience and a unique perspective, and what we need to do is when we make decisions about what are our priorities in society, especially our economic priorities, we need to consult everyone and find a consensual decision that we can all agree on. Not a kind of, 51% believe in this, therefore we should do it, or this PhD told us we should do it, therefore we should do it, or this politician or CEO told us we should do it, therefore we should do it. No, we should consult as many people as possible, because people are intelligent, people do learn from their experience, and that's how we should social decisions. And see, this is exactly the criticism of globalization. Right now, what we have is globalization from above. And what all these activists and movements are saying is we need globalization from below, globalization that's consultative and democratic and participatory.
Now, there's a fear, a great fear, that by the people that are making the decisions now, the economic and political elite, God forbid that the rabble would be allowed in on the decision-making.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. There is that fear. It's not the transformation isn't going to come through from them. In a sense, it has to come through protest and through people asking questions and so on. That's a slow process. I think people, it's been done. And I'm sure Detroit can do it.
Let's go back, Thomas Ponaia, to your trip to Mumbai, India, over. And this was when? In January, was it?
It was January 16th to January 21st.
Right. Yes. And this assemblage of perhaps 125,000 social and political activists from around the world, it's pretty easy to become discouraged. I know I often can, because from what someone once called the tyranny of the fact. I mean, we live in a world with massive illness, constant wars, poverty everywhere, even in a wealthy country like the United States. And I keep saying another world is possible, but sometimes I wonder, and I expect most people have those doubts, but was it, I suspect there was less of a doubt seeing that many people together from that many countries.
Well, you're right. It's as much a feeling as an idea. When you're surrounded by thousands and thousands of people and the energy of those people and the optimism of those people, that's infectious. One amazing thing about this forum was that 30% of the people there were Dalits. Now, that means they're what we used to call untouchables. They're from the lowest caste in India. So 30% of the participants were from the poorest of the poor in the world. I mean, people coming in there who just had never had this kind of experience. And it was fantastic to see their enthusiasm. In fact, they were the most enthusiastic. Constant, sort of cultural performances, theater performances, dance performances, etc., led by them. And you had a chance, when we saw that, you just had this feeling, yes, people do want another world. They really want another world. The problem is, as you point out, is that power is concentrated in the hands of the few. I mean, I don't know if you know this stat. This statistic came out from the United Nations a few years ago, but 350 people in the world control about 50% of the world's wealth.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's an unbelievable statistic.
And that, as you, I guess you were indicating, that wealth translates into command decision-making that makes it, in many ways, a mockery of formal democracy.
I mean, exactly. And, Peter, I'm pretty sure those 350 people do not do half the work of the world.
Well, someone once said that if they could, if there was a distribution of wealth beginning at their wealth base, and it's not like, you know, people saying, well, they have to give up all their money. I mean, I can't. It's some low figure. I mean, that we could end poverty and just with the, you know, if there was a will for them to understand that, gee, I don't know, it sounds so corny. What is it? We are a village, or it takes a village, or something.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I don't want to quote that lady in any of that.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, pay people according to the amount of work they do.
Mm-hmm. I think, unfortunately, and I don't mean to scare people, but I think things are going in the other direction. It used to be that we thought the Western Industrial Society, particularly North America, was a model. I think many of these this wealthy elite are seeing it the opposite, that the third world countries where people make $1 an hour if they're lucky
is
the model. And,
yeah.
And that's what they're looking at as a model for us.
Well, you know what? This is very interesting. It's a very good point, because back, if you look at, say, from 1975 to the present, right? From 1975 to about 1992, there was over 200 protests in the third world against the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. Since 1992, there's been hundreds of protests here in the first world against the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
That tells us that that what's happening here is they're trying to, like you said, take this model of the buck-an-hour model and bring it, the elite are trying to bring it into the global north, into our world, into our part of the world, and people are recognizing it, recognizing this is an attack on workers, recognizing that, importantly, it's an attack on democracy, and people are rebelling. Understandably.
Yeah, and if someone suggests they ought to raise this pitiful minimum wage, which is a disgrace to the industrialized world that we have, from like 5 1/4, 5 1/2 an hour, you get these Republicans saying, oh, it's class warfare. I mean, the only class warfare that's being practiced is the classes at the top with their assault on the middle class and the working class, and certainly the poor of the world. But hey, I'm not here to make speeches. I'm here to ask you, Thomas Pania, questions. And here, although I make speeches all the time, here is another one. And that is that was there concern at the World Social Forum meeting in Mumbai, India, about the fact that when we present ourselves, and I'm proud to, you know, have that inclusive pronoun there, with objections to top-down globalization and a desire for another world, that the only, first off, the only way we have open almost is direct action protest, because, you know, there's not any, there's little or no political representation through official sources, and so we're just kind of seen as militants or sine waivers, which is cool. I'm a militant sine waiver. But is there concern about that, about transforming the social vision into political action?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There was a lot of educators there. In fact, there's a World Education Forum that often happens right before the World Social Forum. They usually hold it in Brazil. And there was a lot of educators there. And I actually took part on a panel of educators. And I thought that was really great, because that meant that they were trying to, you know, bring it to a very concrete level of teaching in a classroom. So it's not just people out there on the streets, but there are teachers there. And there's lots of different types of people there. There's nurses there. There's engineers there. There's accountants there. I mean, there's lots of different types of people coming to the World Social Forum. I mean, part of their life might be spent doing, you know, direct action street stuff, but also they work in institutions, and they can have impact in those institutions and how things are organized just in your own institution. Is this a democratic process in our institution? Is this consensus, or is this also hierarchical like the rest of the world system?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's lots of ways this can be translated into your daily life. I think this is the great insight, that another world is possible means another way of living is possible. And now, following that, let me give you an example.
Sure.
One of the things that we are imposing on the rest of the world, along with imposing our economic system, is we're imposing our consumer culture. And that's where there's been a huge protest, because people do not want McDonald's shoved down their throat. And we're always saying, oh, it's impossible to consult the whole world. It's impossible to have a greater democratization. But we're perfectly able to put McDonald's on every street corner all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And people are protesting against that. And that, I think, is interesting. But when they protest against this McDonald's, MTV, Microsoft culture, they are saying that your model of development has gone wrong somewhere. That, yes, we've done a lot of amazing things in the West, but somewhere we seem to have gone wrong, because it's not, this consumer culture isn't satisfying to a lot of people in the South, and in my experience, not very satisfying to a lot of people here in the North. So that's another thing that's being protested when we protest globalization. It's protesting this corporate globalization, which pushes one economic model and one cultural model. Everyone should shop. The meaning of your life should be shopping. It's also protesting against that.
Thomas Bonai, I should tell people that your book, Another World is Possible, that you edited, co-edited, contains these popular alternatives to globalization, which is part of the subtitle, and it's a series of essays. And in some manner, we're giving sort of short shrift to everything that's in it, although we are talking about the broad outlines of what you will find. It's published by Zed Publishers, and all of what we're talking about is expanded on considerably. The trade union movement in this country certainly is under massive attack. I mean, there's class warfare again being declared from the top, and the unions are absolutely unprepared for it here, and many of them are even becoming in rocky shape, and many of them realize it, from Seattle to Miami and a lot of places in between. The trade unions of North America have been involved in protesting top-down elite globalization. Were they involved at all in the World Social Forum in India?
Yes, the unions were involved. They've been at every World Social Forum. And I think what's interesting about the unions is the possibility of new alliances between unions all over the world, so that there can be kind of collective action, simultaneous action and simultaneous protests around the world, and maybe even forms of global collective bargaining in the sense of that corporations have many affiliates throughout the world, and that you can protest corporations in maybe new novel ways that cut across national boundaries. So I think the unions have been participating in the forum, and they're a very important part, I think, of this whole movement to build a new world.
And were there people in India, like for representatives of UAW, the steel workers, the Teamsters, people like that, the unions that are probably the most well known in the United States?
Now, in my experience of the forums, there have been, in general, representatives of some of the big unions. I personally did not meet any people from the UAW, and I didn't go to... Now, part of the reason is there's 1,000 workshops and seminars and conferences happening, and you can only go to so many of them. And I was participating in a number, and so I didn't actually go to any that specifically focused on the issue of unions. I mean, this is something also that's important to understand with the World Social Forum. You have people from the labor movement, people from the environmental movement, people from the feminist movement, a church group, students, every different movement possible. So what I generally do is try to follow a couple of tracks that I'm interested in and try to do those tracks substantially. So I didn't have a chance to really engage with a lot of the union guys.
Well, one of the things, Vag, primarily when we do this program, we're trying to interest people in the book and bring our listeners interesting guests, and you've met both those criteria wonderfully, Thomas Bonai. But in this regard, I think you've gained a recruit. Is the World Social Forum going to take place again next year in Porto Alegre, Brazil?
Next year it'll be back in Porto Alegre, and there's discussion of having the next forum after that, hopefully somewhere in Africa.
Hmm.
So I think that's a great idea, because we've got to decentralize the forum as much as possible. But more immediately, on June 23rd, that weekend, there's going to be a Boston Social Forum. And I'm excited about that, because we've got to bring the social forum process locally and here in the U.S.
Wait, this is this June?
This June.
Oh, well, that's good. And actually, there's this website here, the Fourth World Social Forum. Is there information about that on there?
You know, just plug in World Social Forum into your Google or whatever, and you'll get tons of stuff on the World Social Forum.
Tell me the dates again.
June 23rd to 25th.
Gee, guess where I'm going to be?
In Boston.
Yeah.
Great.
Huh.
So will I. Boston Social Forum. I hope to see you there.
I love it.
I hope to see a lot of your listeners there.
Yeah, because another world is possible. I mean, I suppose there's some people, thinking, well, this one's cool, this one's okay, all right, stay with it. But if you look around the world, if you see the potential that lurks in a negative manner, I guess it just takes some imagination to put that, I hate to even call it a slogan, that visionary call, another world is possible, and thinking what are the total possibilities of what we can do, and what do things look like now? I think then Another World is Possible makes a lot more sense. That's the name of the book that is edited by William F. Fisher and my guest, Thomas Panaya. The subtitle, Popular Alternatives to Globalization at the World Social Forum, Zed Publishers, Z-E-D, is who has put it out. And Thomas Panaya, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Night Call is a public affairs presentation of 101 WRIF Detroit. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management or sponsors of WRIF Radio. Night Call is hosted every Sunday night by Peter Werby and produced by OD. Stay tuned for more Riff Rock coming right up on 101 WRIF Detroit.
It's a never-ending quest for absolute perfection at Wild Woody's in Roseville. Wild Woody's and 101 The Riff have scoured all corners of Metro Detroit.
Great.
Every possible nook and cranny.
Got
leaving
it.
No stone unturned.
Okay.
East side, west side, downriver.
Are you going to tell them about the Wild Woody's hottest booty contest or what?
Working on it.
Wild Woody's has what it takes during the dead of winter to keep things hot.
Party your ass off tonight with Bill Walters from 101 WRIF for Wild Woody's hottest booty competition.
Guaranteed to make these cool Michigan nights red.
Taking the party to a whole new level. Check out the lovely ladies of Crazy Horse,
formerly Pure Gold,
as they compete for cash and prizes from Priscilla's with 9 locations in Metro Detroit.
It's a feast for the eyes that you won't find anywhere else in the Motor City.
Take in the view while you knock back buck 50 bottles of beer.
And don't forget, Wednesday nights at Wild Woody's, ladies pay no cover whatsoever.
Get a little crazy and play wild games for killer prizes.
Now, Wednesday nights at Wild Woody's are bootylicious.
Oh,
bootylectable.
Knock it off.
Booty.
We got the point.
Okay, I'll move on.
It's your one surefire chance to keep things hot this winter.
Wild Woody's hottest booty contest tonight.
Wild Woody's on Gratiot South of 14 Mile in downtown Roseville.
More info, call 586-294-5331.
Wild Woody's.
Did you know the limit on annual education savings account contributions is $2,000? Contact a tax professional for more information.
The cutting-edge excitement of motorcycles and products. Get it all when the 23rd Annual Cycle World International Motorcycle Show, presented by Toyota Trucks, arrives in Detroit at the Cobo Exhibition Center, February 20th through 22nd. Come see it all. That's new in 2004. Street bikes, dirt bikes, ATVs, and scooters from Aprilia, BMW, Buell, Ducati, Harley-Davidson, Honda, Kawasaki, Moto Guzzi, Suzuki, Triumph, Victory, and Yamaha. Don't miss the Ball of Steel stunt team, where three motorcycle riders will perform insane stunts in a giant steel globe. And check out the factory, complete with gear, accessories, and experts to answer all your questions. And there will be jackets, helmets, boots, and everything you need to ride on sale. You can get it all. The 2004 Cycle World International Motorcycle Show, presented by Toyota Trucks, February 20th through 22nd at the Cobo Exhibition Center. Tickets available at the door or online at www.motorcycleshows.com. Also, don't forget to get your discount coupons at your local dealers, endorsed by the AMA.
The Riff Rocks with Rick Fox. We've got more non-stop rock. Next on The Riff.
Men, how do you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtral, the new climax control system for men. Maxtral lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtral is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of stamina you want and a woman never forgets. Maxtral is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make the pleasure go on and on with Maxtral, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtral or call now and try Maxtral risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708. Prolong the pleasure, maximize the control, and see how much longer you last with Maxtral. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708.
Isn't this an indictment of our entire society?
Big Daddy Arthur T taking it home. Baby.
This is 101 WRIF Detroit.
Let's do it. Let's rumble.
Riff rocks.
No one knows what it's like to be the bad man, to be the sad man behind blue eyes. And no one knows what it's like to be hated, to be faded, to telling only lies. But my dreams, they aren't as empty as my conscience seems to be. I have hours only lonely. My love is vengeance that's never free. What it's like to feel these feelings like I do. And I blame you. No one bites back his heart on their anger. None of my pain will can show through. But my dreams, they aren't as empty as my conscience seems to be. I have hours only lonely. My love is vengeance that's never free.
Discover
City's Metallica Station.